United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credit.
Kim Baker resigned.
Let's go! Fish.
Well, good morning and welcome to Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. Hey, the number is 347-945-5229, and I'm in the studio with Mark Manzi. I know today is Second Thursday, and Mark and Dr. Matt Mason and Dr. Brandy Galea are supposed to be here with me, but they left me. They said I wasn't eating right, I wasn't doing right, and so they told me to kick rocks, go away.
That's what it's
your mic's not on. Go on this one, Mark. Pull this one over, yeah.
Matt's going to get my bill for filling in for him.
You should, absolutely, absolutely. Because, you know.
I don't know where I'm at this morning. I don't know where I'm at.
You're at the radio station.
Yeah, but where's the radio station?
I
walked out. It's sunny. It's 70. There's
beautiful.
No wind. There's
the
no rain.
Yeah,
there's no clouds. I didn't know where I was.
It's absolutely gorgeous here in Northeast Ohio.
There's nothing prettier. No, there's no place on earth prettier than Northeast Ohio on a day
on
like
a clear
today.
Day.
On a clear
on
day.
On a clear day. And I have it is 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock. And I ran into Mark last night. We were doing some screenings for the new judicial candidate. I said, "Hey, Mark, what you doing tomorrow?" And he said, "I don't know." And I said, "You want to come in?"
I get afraid. She says, "Hey, Mark, I need to talk to you." I thought, "Oh no,
this is a good thing."
How you been?
I'm wonderful.
You know, I don't get to see you too often anymore during the, you know, because we're running our own way. We're all busy.
Everybody's busy, but we're doing good. I'm doing great. I have no complaints. I'm going out to Fit Family today at 4 or 5 o'clock to work out, and I'm doing that 3 days a week. And went to see Judge Rusu get
sworn in
on Tuesday. Yeah. Doing some stuff, some community work over on the east side of Youngstown, where I'm from, because I believe, you know, I can't sit here and bark all day long and not do something about it. And so since I have to put my money where my mouth is, go out and start making some impact and change in the community. So I was out there on last night, and my schedule gets double booked.
Yeah, I know how that goes. I'm looking at the third week of July right now, and I'm thinking, oh, how did I do that? It's you know, a couple of organizations. I got my high school reunion coming up, and I'm not a big reunion.
Oh, that'll be nice, Mark.
But you know, they're putting three classes together, and they turned it into a weekend event. So my class meets separately on a Friday night, and then you can go golfing on Saturday morning. But for those of us who don't golf, we're going to go to a local establishment in the morning to sit and occupy their back room for breakfast.
That sounds like so much fun.
And then there's three classes, 68, 69, 70, having a joint reunion at Mr. Anthony's on that Saturday night. That's a long time, though.
No, it's not.
With folks. But it's going to be good, too, because I'm friends with a lot of these folks on Facebook, and they're flying in from all over the country, from Arizona, from Washington State. And I think that's kind of cool.
But you know what's really funny? People come home, or they come back to their reunions. They do their best to, like, go on a diet and lose the last 50 pounds that they gained in the last 20 years in the last 2 weeks. I'm serious. That's how it works. That's what people do. I know it.
But the same weekend is my club's big event of the year, and it's
I'm going to that
spectacular. And our mutual friend is playing at that.
I'm going to that.
And I want to go to that.
You can't go to that. You have to go to your class reunion.
Well, I could go Friday night and Saturday morning. I may cut out on Saturday night.
Somebody already took your tickets. And I'm going to go in and sign. I'm going to say, "Who are you?" I'm going to say, "I'm Mark Manzi." And they're going to say, "Who?" Mark Manzi.
Now that I know that you're going, I'm definitely going there.
Because, you know, when you have transgender,
yes.
If you can transgender, you can do anything. So I can become a Italian white man.
The man part. I'd like to know how you do that racial switch.
I could do this. That'll be fun. I'm going to say, "Who?" And I'm going to go, "I'm Mark Manzi."
Now that I know that you're going, I'm going to go. I'm going to can that. Listen,
you can't do that.
I'll see the same folks on Friday Saturday night.
You can't
Saturday
do that.
Morning.
No. You can't do that.
You have to understand, you know what the name of the party is? The White Party.
Oh, we all wear white?
We all wear white.
No problem. I can do that. I got white. I got a new white suit.
All right.
I got one linen and one blessy. Yeah, well, so, are we dressed up or are we comfortable?
It is uber dressy casual.
Uber dressy, dressy casual.
Yeah.
What is an uber dressy casual?
Well, you're not going to show up, you know, with your shorty short shorts where you see your combs and gum. So, you know, you got to.
Why not? Just make them out of silk. It'll work. It works. Just put, you know, make them into silk and it'll be okay. Don't you know? Haven't you heard?
No, I haven't. I say, well, I was there on the 4th of July. And, oh, my. Wow.
Yeah, people have not learned how to dress appropriately for the life. I mean, you know, what that would be used to call porn pinup.
Yeah.
It's like everyday dress.
I sure wouldn't let somebody, but I'll tell you what, it's a beautiful woman, really nice looking woman.
Scantily
clad.
But women have not learned that men don't need to see everything. You have to leave some things to the imagination.
Well, they left some things to the imagination.
Not enough.
Not much, that's right. Not enough.
You don't have to imagine much.
So you got to wear white. I can wear white. And, you know, it's going to be poolside. We're going to pretend that it's like Great Gatsby City.
Okay. So it's got to be white. I got to be at a pool, and I can't throw people in, huh?
No, you can't.
But you've got some people over at your club that I throw in the water. Can I please?
Hey, listen, we had a problem over there. One of our umbrellas went kablooey and hit some woman on the head and the neck yesterday, completely overturned the table.
Ooh,
and whatnot.
That's because you bought cheap tables.
If any of these folks are listening, here's a word. When you're writing about what happened, don't put it in emails. I'm a lawyer, and I'm looking at the emails. I'm thinking, why are you writing this stuff down? Because you know what the first thing they're going to subpoena?
The email. But don't worry about it. You don't have to worry about that. All you have to do is have a server problem, let it crash, and then blow them up. Don't worry about it.
That's right.
See, everything is digital. You know, they tell you everything that is digital in America always has a footprint. You can always pull it back,
Yeah. Except
for when you're with the IRS.
Yes.
So don't worry about it. You know, all you have to do is have a server problem, go outside, and then send it to a crusher.
Oh, there we go.
Then you don't have a problem with that.
And I know where the crushers are.
Then you're okay. Then you're okay.
You know, I did some work for a couple of scrap metal companies around here, and I know where they are.
Me too. So just take them to the crusher. Don't worry about it.
Aren't those places amazing?
Yes, they got more toys
in all sincerity, you know, I did some work for these folks, and you look at them on the outside, and you say to yourself, my God, they're dirty, horrible businesses. But let me tell you, they're probably the greenest companies around because these folks separate out everything, and everything goes where it's supposed to go.
And they know where the money is.
And they recycle their water. I mean, there's no.
They know where the money is.
Yeah, they know where the money is. But they do a really good job.
Now, are you talking about the scrappers or the e-scrappers? Because we have e-scrappers here, too.
No,
we have electronic scrappers here.
No, I don't know. These are the metal scrappers.
Oh, see, I know my friends are electronic waste scrappers.
Okay.
And they pull the gold off the motherboards.
Oh, yeah, I can believe that. I looked at some of their separators. I mean, they take the cars and how they dispose the cars. It's absolutely amazing. And although, you know, it's not the prettiest plant you're going to see anywhere, at the end of the day, what would we do without them? Because these folks, they could recover 99.5% and get 99.5% of where the stuff needs to go.
I know they make a lot of money.
And they make a lot of money.
I know this. Some of the wealthiest people in the area.
I was in the wrong business.
I don't like getting dirty. That's my biggest problem.
Yeah. But, you know, you heard that number. That's the sound of money. Ba-boom, ba-boom. We have a mutual friend, and he had a stamping plant. And I would back when I first met him, I came back to town here in the early 70s, I walked into his stamping plant, and it was boom, boom, boom. And the whole building rattled. And I said to him, how do you stand listening to that all day? He says, every time it booms, that's more money.
That's it. Put a pair of earplugs in and call it a day.
Call it a day.
So, Mark, what else have you been doing?
This afternoon, I'm going up to a Power of the Arts Steering Committee meeting, and we're going to
talk. In Warren?
No, this is going to be up at it's going to be at the Tyler Historical Center. And then tomorrow there's a town hall meeting up at Bliss Hall at Youngstown State for Power of the Arts. And everybody's going to give our reports, particularly on our efforts for public financing for the arts.
Question for you. How did you like the news this week of the RNC going to Cleveland?
I am so excited. And I tried to make a hotel reservation, and they looked at my name, and they said, uh-uh, you're not allowed into Cuyahoga County that week.
You didn't try to make a reservation, did you?
No.
Oh. Because I'm going, you know there's a hotel for just Ohio still.
Yeah. I want to go. You got press passes.
Don't get me started. I've got a whole vision.
Okay.
I got a whole vision. A vision for Radio Row and for us for that week. So hopefully it will come to fruition.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got some
I don't have
your audience. The most powerful black woman in Ohio is sitting here in front of
you
right now.
No, don't believe that. the brokest black woman in Ohio is sitting right here with you. I'm just trying
to... Yeah, but money and power are two different things.
I'm just trying to advance some things and do some things. But if I have a vision for 2016.
You have a dream?
Yes, I had a major dream.
Okay.
And I pray that it will come to fruition.
I do, too, because I want to go to the thing, and I can't do it.
Now, listen. It depends on which horse you pick.
Yeah.
See, if you want to be a delegate, you got to pick the right horse.
Well, I know who the next president's going to be. I know who the nominee is.
Who's going to be the nominee? The
nominee is going to be, oh, you're not going to want to hear this, Mitt Romney.
No. No, we're not doing that again.
He's running.
I don't care if he is running.
I think he can win.
I don't think he can. I mean, if you look at I was reading something on yesterday, how many times Abraham Lincoln ran for office?
Yeah.
How many times Ronald Reagan ran for office?
Yeah.
How many times Nixon ran for office?
Yeah.
Mitt Romney, this is not his year. He can't do it.
I don't know.
He can't do it. He can't do it. Trust me when I say that. He cannot get past Magic Underwear. And last time... What?
I know about the Magic Underwear.
You don't know about the Magic
Underwear? Yeah, I know about the Magic Underwear, but at least, you know, he closed up the holes on the border.
It's not about closing the holes on the border. It's
closing up the holes on the Magic Underwear.
No, it's about being able to address it. And I thought he was... And don't get me wrong. I can support him. But... If he's not going to address his constituents who are evangelicals, he will never make it in. And he doesn't want to bring up his faith to them. And that's why he lost the last time.
Maybe the evangelicals have learned a lesson.
Let me say this. You never, this is something that people who are not a part of the evangelical faith, we're not talking about Christians, that you say, I'm a Christian and I go to the Catholic Church. This is not about Episcopalians. This is about hardcore evangelicals.
Yeah.
You can't just sit up there and convince them based on money. They're, when you look at them and we look at when you look at Israel and when you look at Islamists, when you look at the jihadists, theirs is based on what they believe. Evangelicals is based on what we believe.
But when you get to that sort of an issue, and I
there are multiple issues because you have to realize they don't believe they believe. See, we've already had a president who has no God consciousness.
That's my point.
And so when you so the next president you're going to have is going to be a liberal or going to be a moderate or a progressive who we all believe that Mitt Romney is a progressive. You know, Obamacare was based upon Romneycare.
Right.
And then on top of that, you're going to put a man in there who we believe is a part of a cult. That's not going to fly. That's like putting – people think of that as like putting Wicca in the White House.
You know, normally, Tracy, on what you said, I'd agree with you 100%. I don't this time around.
You don't have to.
Because I feel that the experience we've had
– You think it will change something?
Let me put it to you this way. You know, I'll tell you a story. When I went, I went back and forth from Russia for a while, and we went into Russia through Budapest, and I was going on a university tour, and we went to a hotel that wasn't really a hotel. It was a converted college dormitory, and it was absolutely awful. We had to spend two nights there before we went into Russia. And I called up my partner here, and I said, I don't want to stay in this place when I come back And it was at the time the telephone lines weren't really connected. You could talk for free for 30 seconds. And then you'd have to call back and talk for 30 seconds more. They'd have to call back in 30 seconds more. And it was 2 in the morning to my partner when I'm doing this here. But I told them to go make a reservation because there was a Hilton that they had just built in Budapest, which was still communist at the time, down the street. I said, get me the hotel there. And so he did. He made changes there. Then I went into Russia for 2 weeks. When I came back, that dormitory looked like the Taj Mahal. I was never more glad to get back to any place in my life as I was to that dormitory. And I canceled the reservations at the Hilton because then I realized how bad it was. And I think the country's going to be that way right now.
And I'm telling you, if you're looking for your percentage points of evangelicals, they ain't coming.
I'm not sure they.
They're needed.
I don't know.
They're needed. It's just like saying the Democrat Party doesn't need black folks. You can't have. Remember, we're winning by points. We're winning. You're looking by states.
Okay, look.
You're looking at the Electoral College.
Give me a candidate.
John Kasich. I got to take a break. I'll be right back.
Everyone faces challenges in their lives. Handling it on our own sometimes is too overwhelming, but Turning Point Counseling can help. Turning Point offers the highest quality, individualized, confidential behavioral health care. Our professional and caring staff can help you or your loved one get started on the road to recovery today. Turning Point Counseling, because behavioral health care is health care. Don't wait. Visit our website for more information or call today for care. Everybody faces challenges in their lives. Sometimes these challenges can be too much to handle on our own. That's where Turning Point Counseling can help for depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, drug and alcohol abuse and addiction, personality disorders, crisis intervention, and more. Turning Point also provides residential services in our crisis stabilization unit for those who need inpatient care. Turning Point Counseling Services, helping you on the road to recovery.
Concerned about your health? Confused about the amount of prescription drugs you are taking? Wondering which vitamins to take? Call Dr. Matt Mason, board-certified wellness physician as well as a chiropractor at Mason Wellness Center. Dr. Mason combines nutritional therapy, functional medicine, and chiropractic services to keep people healthy and get those of you that are ill feeling better faster. Mason Wellness Center is located on Layer Road in Warren, Ohio. To make an appointment or to receive additional info, call our office at 330-219-6450.
Your car will look brand new after a professional cleaning at Kingley Hand Wash and Wax. All work is done by hand, which protects the paint, leaves no water spots. You won't believe how good it looks. Walk-ins are always welcome, or book an appointment for a full detailing. Thursday is Ladies' Day. Get an additional service free with any regular wash. Kingley offers pickup and drop-off service. They'll take you to work, an appointment, and pick you up when your car is ready. If it's not Kingley, it's not clean. Kingley Hand Wash and Wax.
Fit Family. Unique, individualized, and promoting a healthy, active lifestyle. Fit Family on Route 46 in Austin Town designs a personal exercise program just for you, with your own personal trainer. Each client at Fit Family in Austin Town receives their own certified personal trainer with their membership. And at Fit Family, we listen to you and design a fitness program to the type of fitness you're looking for, with all the equipment you need for strength training, cardio, Pilates, and more. We also offer classes in Zumba, yoga, kickboxing, step, 5K training, line dancing, silver sneaker, and real rider cycling. Fit Family is open Monday through Saturday with hours that fit your schedule. Find out more about Fit Family in Austintown. Call 330-793-4466. That's 330-793-4466. Visit us on the web at fitfamily1.com. That's fitfamily1.com.
I'm Julio Flores with your headline news. The Mahoney Grand Jury is expected to consider murder and other charges against the man suspected of killing a teenage girl in Austintown and tossing her body into a dumpster. A Wednesday hearing in county court for 18-year-old Ricky Darnell Williams IV was continued until Friday after the prosecuting attorney said that the case is expected to go before the grand jury on Thursday. Williams faces 10 charges, including aggravated murder, abuse of a corpse, kidnapping, intimidation, tampering of evidence, abduction, possessing criminal tools, and criminal trespassing. Former Mahoning County Probate Court Judge Mark Belinke faced a judge Wednesday afternoon for sentencing on a charge of tampering with records. Judge Ronald Suster sentenced Belinke to 60 days house arrest, 200 hours of community service, ordered him to pay a $2,500 fine, and placed him on probation for 2 years. For WSOM News, I'm Julio Flores.
Declare your apartment or rental house a bummer-free zone with renter's insurance from Grange. It protects the contents of your home from such major hassles as theft, weather, and plumbing mishaps for just pennies a day.
Let Crab Insurance Agency, your Grange independent agent, show you how a Grange rental policy is an even better bargain when paired with Grange auto coverage. Call Crab Insurance Agency at 330-332-1586.
Products not available in all states.
1-800-530-WSOM or 347-945-5229. Call in now to talk to Tracy and friends on News Talk 600 WSOM.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. I'm sitting in the studio with Mark Manji, and we're blowing through our conversation off air that should be on air.
We're using our radio voice.
That's right.
Here, not my Joe radio voice.
Okay, you've got the radio voice.
Yeah, there we go.
And,
I'm trying to be calm and low.
And it's going to be we're going to do a political day. And we're talking about the presidential nominee for 2016, because I was asking Mark about the convention coming to Ohio, coming to Cleveland, which I'm really excited about. But we are looking here, and he and I are on opposite sides of the who we think ought to be the nominee. And I'm saying that if you have to have a libertarian, because remember, Republicans are leaning more libertarian.
The issue with the libertarians going to be in foreign policy, and that's where the libertarians kind of run into problems, because libertarians are traditionally isolationists. And given the problems in the Mideast, I don't think the country is going to be in the mood for a libertarian.
But you can't – I didn't say a libertarian. You can't elect a libertarian.
Yeah.
But you have to have a Republican who has a libertarian feel. And you can't get that out of Christie and Romney.
Right.
That's not going to work. So you need someone who's going to be able to embrace the libertarians, cultivate the evangelicals, and still be a Republican. Because you can't win.
Yeah, that libertarianism and the evangelicals are diametrically opposed. It's an oxymoron.
And that's what I'm saying. But they still can they can still get along, because look at Styx. Styx is pretty much a libertarian. Alex, who calls in here, he's a libertarian. There are several things that we agree on, and there are several things that we disagree on. But then you've got people throughout the whole state of Ohio, and I don't know if they call themselves the Tea Party now or what. But they're very extremely ultra-conservative.
Yeah.
And they are making moves, whether we like it or not.
And they're vehement. I mean, they are very strong.
Absolutely.
Ultra-conservatives. Yeah.
Absolutely. So they're not going to go left. So you've got to be able to coalesce these people all into the same. I was with Haley Barbour not too long ago, and he says, we've got to learn how to work together in spite of our differences. And the same. And I look at Rob Portman. Rob Portman comes out and he says, I support same-sex marriage. He had a son who is gay. And so I like Rob. Rob's my friend. I love that guy. I disagree with him overwhelmingly on his stand on same-sex marriage.
But you agree with him on
most other things.
Most other, and therein lies
issue. But most people are not that open-minded. And then I'm not open to when it comes to that, because I'd have to wrestle with that because of a stand on that, because of my faith and my belief. But with that said, as Haley says, I've got to – do I want Obama or do I want Portman? So if I had to choose between the two, where do I go?
A lot's going to depend on what the Democratic race is going to look like. I don't think Hillary Clinton's going to be.
Turn that over, Mark. It'll help you.
Oh.
Yeah, you're having problems. He's getting ready to box himself in the head with. There you go.
There we go.
And move the whole. There's a big. That's a long cord. Just move it on and pick it up and move it over to you. Just pull it. There you go. He's having cord problems. He's going to strangle himself with the cord.
I can't walk and spit at the same time. I don't think Hillary Clinton's going to be the Democratic nominee.
Well, Elizabeth Warren.
And she's a scary.
But she's making
like
moves.
Like the Chippewa, Cherokee,
Iroquois,
I'm an Indian too. That Swede comes over. Dude. Oh, my Lord. She's an Indian. Oh,
good morning, Six. How are you?
I'm doing great, Tracy. Well, sort of. Got a little bit of chest cold, but other than that.
It sounds like you got a frog in your throat. You ate a frog?
Yeah. Big one. Big bullfrog out here in the pond.
Hi, Sticks.
Hey, my ducks are out there, by the way. But anyways, Mark, that's not entirely true. You said that libertarians are opposed, diametrically opposed from evangelicals. And I know an awful lot. I'm a libertarian evangelical. And it's
I didn't mean that sticks with evangelicals. I meant there's issues when you're coming to conservative Republicans and libertarians, and that area of difference is going to be in foreign policy.
Excuse me, I got a question. I thought Perry wasn't going to meet President Obama at the plane.
Well, he did.
I thought he wasn't going.
No,
to.
Well, he said he wouldn't meet him. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
No, go ahead, Sticks.
Yeah, no, he said he wouldn't meet him at the plane unless he'd have a face-to-face meeting with him during the day.
Okay. And I guess he got that, huh? Very good.
Yeah.
They had a Youngstown negotiation.
Over a beer?
No, off air I'll tell you what a Youngstown negotiation is.
Okay. Go ahead, Sticks. What you were saying?
Well, you know, the libertarian foreign policy, you know, the problem with libertarians is we're like trying to hurt cats. You know, we all have a different view on foreign policy, but getting the government out of marriage altogether, that's not anti-evangelical at all. You know, some of the other positions that the libertarians take is basically just freedom. You know, government is forced, and we want as little of it as absolutely net possible.
So who's going to be the nominee, Six? Who do you think?
I don't know. I have no idea at this point. I would like to see Elizabeth Warren versus Ted Cruz, and let's get this fight over with.
That would be fun.
Elizabeth Warren and Ted Cruz? Why would that be fun?
Well, let's have the debate. Let's have the debate whether we're going to be a European socialist nation or whether we're going to be a constitutional republic like we're supposed to be.
So now let me ask you this. I see where they're trying to get Sarah Palin came out of the woods, and I'm not a Sarah Palin fan. And she came out and she wants them to go after President Obama and impeach him. Yet Boehner says he's going to sue them. So they asked Boehner yesterday, you know, sue versus impeach, and he says, we're going to sue him. What do you guys think about that? One versus the other.
You go first, Sticks.
Neither one, as far as I'm concerned, is a really good idea. I think the Congress should take the Congress's power back, and they should operate with the power of the purse and just shut his money off. He can write all the executive orders he wants, but if he doesn't have any money to fund them, he's out of luck. That's my opinion. I honestly believe an impeachment would cause race riots.
You think that if they tried to impeach President Obama, it would cause a major uproar?
Yes.
Mark?
I think he ought to be impeached. Do I think it's a good political move to do it? No. And the problem we've got has to be with first of all, we don't control the Senate, and so that's
the mute issue.
Yeah, and you know, you're going to put risk a lot of political capital for something that you're going to lose. Second, the press would just, I mean, knowing how the press is, it just would tear us apart. And, you know, and a lot of Americans can't think past the end of their nose and don't really understand some of this stuff, although I think one by one they are slowly learning as all of these things begin to affect them individually. I think the lawsuit's a waste of time. I don't think it'll get anywhere. But, you know, it certainly makes a political statement. After the election's another story, and I think that his Achilles heel is the IRS scandal. That is go-to-jail stuff, and I think there's something pretty awful in those emails that they did what they did, and I think that if there's a chance of impeachment, that's where it's going to come from if they're able to get the documentation to show what I know happened. The other thing that he may have a problem with, and I keep waiting for the whistleblower. We had the whistleblowers come out on the VA. This mess down on the border, you can't tell me that he's not behind it.
Bush did it.
You can't tell me that President Obama's political operatives are down in these countries organizing the send-up of this many children, because that doesn't happen by itself. No parent, I don't care what the circumstance, would willingly send their kid up on a dangerous route like that. Oh, you're going to get hurt because of the violence down here. No, I don't think so. There's something else going on. And it'll come out. I just don't know when. But this is an absolutely community organizing tactic. He's moving massive amounts of population across borders for political purposes. He has his political people down there doing this, and don't be surprised if there's money changing hands. They won't find that out until he's out of office.
I think we're giving President Obama too much credit, because I don't think it's all him.
But I think
he has a lot to do with it, because if you look at like Organizing for America, which is the 527 or nonprofit that
mm-hmm.
he has started,
yes,
which takes all the databases that he has from his campaign and puts them into one central location.
Yes.
So I'm receiving all kinds of information based upon me being a part of Organizing for America.
Sure.
And people don't realize that they are using a lot of things in media and in communications media to begin to use the social, the entertainment, And what they call converge them into one, so that your thought processes and your information comes from the same source, yet from different sources.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's all him, but I think they're working in concert with some other people.
Well, there's one more thing about this border thing that a lot of people don't realize. The majority of these people, I understand, are coming from Honduras.
Correct.
And Honduras was a peaceful nation until 2008, when there was a military coup. And shortly after the coup, there was an election. And the world sent inspectors down there to inspect the election. And every nation on the planet said the election was a farce except one. And guess what nation that was? Us. And the president invited the winner of that election to the White House and had a meeting with him at the White House. So
really,
yes. So if you want,
yeah.
So if you want to create a crisis, we've destabilized countries for generations. So you destabilize a country, then you sign that executive order that says all the kids that can get across the border can stay here. Honduras has the number one murder rate in the world.
Okay. So does Chicago and New York, but could they tell me?
It has the number one. Okay.
Okay, but I heard this morning that in the propensity or statistics for getting shot in New York and Chicago is like 1 in 15. And in Honduras, it's like 1 in 16.
Okay.
So the same statistical math applies both in urban inner cities and across the United States and in Honduras, from my understanding. And I may be wrong. Go ahead. Good morning, South Carolina.
Good morning. Good morning, Tracy. How are you doing?
And speaking of which, I thank you for the text this morning telling me they blamed it on Bush.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they blamed it on George Bush. I mean, I was, you know, I watched my local news, and then at 7 o'clock, CBS comes on, and they do their little 90 seconds, you know, things. And I'm listening to, I think her name was Heather or something, whatever her name is. And they're started talking about the whole thing with the immigration thing, and then she goes into this thing, well, you know, is it actually the fault of President Obama, or could it be the 2000, the bill that President Bush, you know, signed into law in 2008, and so on and so forth. And I'm like, I just almost fell out of the bathroom when I heard that one. So they're going to blame it on Bush, you know. I think Chris was saying that that's a human right. That was a human rights bill, or a human trafficking bill, that was all about. And it's crazy. It is absolutely crazy.
You want to say something, Mark?
No, I just love it. They blame it on Bush. They keep blaming it on Bush. You know, here's the thing that bothers me. With this president, you're going to have to come to one conclusion. He's either the dumbest guy on earth or the smartest guy on earth. There's no in between. You know, and depending on the situation, I vacillate between the two. When things don't add up, I always say look for the money. And, you know, and this thing with this border thing doesn't add up. And that tells me somewhere, someplace, there's money changing hands. And I'm looking, and I get so frustrated when I watch the news, and that includes Fox News, who make arguments, well, why doesn't he see this? If he just do this, the problem goes away. You can make those kinds of arguments, and why are you so, you know, why are they so, you know, shocked that he's not doing what you think he's going to do?
No,
because he's doing exactly what he wants to do. He knows exactly what he's doing, and this is part of the grand plan. This was going on, and I think there was a story that was really underreported on the news about a week ago, where Homeland Security put out a contract for people to take care and transport children back in January. And it was a, you know, they had to put it out for bids, and so they published the contract.
In January. But the news didn't break until June.
But that's exactly my point. And the fact that they hit it, and I think this bothers me the most, they almost got away with it. Because this has been going on for a while, and it took one of these border agents to take a picture. And even after that picture appeared on Drudge, it took another 10 days to 2 weeks for this story to bubble up to the top. And now he's preventing people from going in there and even going into these camps. What is he doing? This is all by design. It's all deliberate. And those kids were brought here. And he's behind it, or his people are behind it.
I heard reports
that the Mexicans are allowing bus fulls to come directly through Mexico. They're issuing worker visas to Salvadorans and Hondurans with no intent of them ever working in Mexico, just to get them up here to the northern border.
Now, do you think Mexico's doing that just because they're good people, or somebody's behind there telling them to do it and paying them for it?
Listen, that's one of the things that I've seen. I can't go into too much detail, but I've got a friend that lives in Guatemala, and he says that there's a certain part of that area that's really rough, but it's limited to a certain part, you know, and it's not as bad as people say it is, or the news media is saying it is down there, you know. But you know as well, the people that have looked at the Mexican, you know, immigration policy know, the first time you come through there, they send you back. The second time you come through their country, you know, you're going to go to jail for a while. They're letting these people, they're issuing these visas to these people to pass through, and this many people coming through Mexico? No. Somebody's getting paid somewhere.
Of course they're getting paid. And don't be surprised if the parents down there are getting paid.
Well, I don't think parents are getting paid. I don't, because it takes a whole lot of money to transport anyone from Honduras to America across an illegal border. I mean, that takes a little piece of change.
Oh, I don't think so, Tracy.
Actually, not too much, Tracy.
No.
Not too much. Have you seen the Mexican bus system? They take old school buses. They buy old school buses from the U.S., take them down there, refurb them, and they move like clockwork down there. Then you get on the bus at the border, and you can ride all the way across Mexico straight to California.
But I'm talking about smugglers. I'm talking about, you just don't get on a – because, I mean, they don't make that kind of money down there, do they?
But that's the point, Tracy. This isn't a smuggling operation. To get this many people here and this short of a time, there had to be a concerted effort. This just doesn't happen by smuggling. If it were smuggling, it'd be a lot slower.
So why would we go down and bring them up here like that? Why would we do that?
Because he wants to repopulate the country.
Well, why does he want to repopulate the country?
Because they're all going to be voting Democrat in 10 years.
So he wants to repopulate the country, so they'll be voting Democrat in 10 years. In 10 years, we won't even be talking about Barack Obama. I pray.
No, we won't. But you bring up a dependent class. You have to figure if you're bringing into this country over a period of 2 years, 200,000 children, which when it's said and done, that's about what it'll add up to over a 2 to 2.5 year period.
But that's a million people because these children are going to have babies.
Yeah, I know that. That's the point I'm trying to make. And they're all going to be government dependent. And they're going to be taught in government camps. They're in camps. Or they're going to go into government schools because they're going to be paying for all of these children. And they're all going to be taught liberal democratic orthodoxy. This is not unusual for these kinds of people that follow the people like the socialist Alinsky. Hello. Hello.
Number six.
You know, the Alinsky way of doing things. This is how
Alinsky.
Yeah, this is how socialists think. That Occupy Wall Street thing
was
the same thing. That thing wasn't spontaneous. That thing was paid for by Barack Obama's people. This guy is.
How in the heck did he get this much power? Who is this guy?
Because he's got money people behind him who are ridden with guilt.
Guilt of what? What are they guilty of? What do they do?
I don't know. Why do people think the way they do? You know, it's crazy. These people are brainwashed in our schools. They come out. There has to be, a good cause in effect. I sat through the most absurd conversation about the geese in Mill Creek Park in my life.
Hold on, Mark.
Hear me out. I sat there with a very conservative hunter and fisherman. This guy goes out and hunts, he goes out and fish. And he says to me, well, maybe it's not so bad if they would have taken the geese and used them for food for the poor.
People don't eat geese, do they?
And I looked at him and I said, really? You want to call up Mike Iberis at Second Harvest Food Bank and stuff, pick up 200 carcasses and go have them cleaned and give them to pets? It doesn't work that way. Why does there always have to be some sort of perceived politically correct result to justify what people do? And so you look at folks today, whether they're dealing with it's the same thought process. They come to a conclusion. I don't know whoever said liberalism is a mental disease. I've come to the conclusion that's exactly right. Because these folks always have to have what's perceived to be a politically correct effect as a result of their actions. And sometimes you just have to do stuff because it has to be done. So these people are out there. I think it's a hoot that the Koch brothers have been accused of all this horrible stuff by my liberal friends on Facebook. It's horrible. Are investing in coal mines in Australia. They're nemesis. The biggest environmental contributor to Barack Obama and the United States is investing in coal mines in Australia. This stuff is absolutely whacked because people are coming to illogical conclusions because our synapses have snapped. The brains aren't functioning right.
They're functioning right.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
How?
They're functioning left. Good morning, Covina Man.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I owe Styx an apology because I thought Styx was the craziest dude I ever heard, but Mark just takes the cake. Tracy cannot call anybody out for being crazy ever again on her show because she just let this guy come on the radio, just spew all kind of conspiracy.
Why don't you get to the point?
No,
hey, back. Hey.
Okay. Let me get to the point. I had a question I had put in the chat room maybe about probably 20 minutes ago. I had asked, and it might be mute because people are not saying on this show right now. I had asked what policies could the GOP run on which would turn their numeric statistics around, given that the GOP lost the popular vote 3 out of the last 4 presidential elections. That was a question I had posed to you. I would like to see if you guys have an answer to that.
Why don't we do that at the top of the hour? Because I've got about 7 minutes before I go to my. Good morning, Alabama.
Yeah, how y'all doing? I got a issue. Me and my brother got in a debate because I posted something about a guy who was a sprinter, and he black guy. And, you know, Michael Johnson, the guy that ran the 200-round 96, you know, with the gold Nike, came out and said, no, I just want to, it's kind of something that you guys, I think, would be interested in. So he came out and said that, you know, descendants of slaves are the best athletes. Blacks are the best athletes in the world, right? Which I agree. And
Alabama,
so,
are you getting ready to go
Let me finish. Let me finish.
Were you not listening? No. You changed this whole subject. I didn't told you.
No, because it's real privy to the conversation if you let me get in.
Then it better go back around to the whole conversation about politics.
So
my brother
calls it racist, right? He said what I said was racist, which I was like, no. I said, first of all, it can be proven because it's proven every year when they had the sprint. But not that. What I was saying was he said that. That's like if a white guy say you put a white guy in business, he's going to dominate. I said, well, that has to do with resources and opportunity more so than, you know, innate talent and ability. So that's the point. And I just want to just have insight on that.
Had nothing to do with the topic.
It didn't have nothing to do with the topic, did it? Alabama. What the heck?
Y'all can ignore me then. Look here. I've been up here in the morning. I've been up here this morning. I'm up here doing, I was watching Family Matters on my little laptop and putting out,
you
doing some emails.
I called up.
I'm in the midst of a debate, and I called y'all trying to get some insight on it, and y'all bashed me for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You should have called Eloise.
Hey, during the break, we'll knock that out, man. On the air, we had a topic.
Yeah, because we're talking about trying to figure out how the country going to get out of what it's in. Because, you know, Mark goes off on a tangent. Because the man comes back in here and he says that Styx is now sane and Mark is now insane. I think all of them crazy. And you come in with, I don't even know.
I want to know why I'm crazy.
Somebody's going to be crazy.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine?
Would you be mine? Mark, would you be my neighbor?
It's my turn to be crazy. Okay, you know.
Yeah,
Mark,
I'm just trying to get to, if you literally look at what's going on in America, and I've got to take a break. If you really look at what's going on in America right now and how this is working, I think we're giving President Obama too much credit because I don't think he's that smart. I think Valerie Jarrett is the one who's doing a whole lot of stuff behind the scenes. I think they are. I think that the people coming up from the border is a planned attack, not only from the progressive, but it's a progressive movement. It's bigger than just one man, and this has been in the works for a very, very long time. I think the one world order. I think it came in way before. I think it started with FDR. But if I go back to, what's his name, Henry Kissinger?
Yeah.
When he took the dollar off the gold standard?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things that have been moving towards this state right now. We're just seeing a larger view, a manifestation. And with the World Wide Web and with the Internet and the 24-hour news cycle, you're getting more information. And so now it's coming to a head.
I think there's a lot of posturing.
And when I say that, in a lot of ways. And because of that, we are, as Americans, those of us who are further down on the food chain, we are overwhelmingly losing because we have no idea. But we talk about the 1%, and we make it to them and us and the 1% about how much money they have. But when I look at the 1%, I'm looking at the elitists who are posturing for power and for greed and for takeover. And this is almost like a subtle coup, that they're trying to take over our nation, change it into what they want it to be, and then make us servants to them. And I don't think we're paying attention to this. And they're using whomever and whatever they can to make it happen. And I'm not going to blame all that on President Obama, because I don't think he has got all that. He is far from it. He is a pawn being used in a chessboard just like everyone else. But his chessboard is moving every other piece on the table. That is the problem. There's somebody that usually rounds up all of the underlings, and that's what he's doing. And he's initiating some things and making some things happen that has nothing to do with it, because at the end of the day, they're going to shoot him too. He's just too dumb to see it. Pardon me?
Oh, Tracy, I owe you an apology, too. You made some sense today. What you said, it made some sense. Mark is just out of I don't understand. You and Six have made some sense today.
But so I'm not gonna give. I really believe that. And so, you know, yeah, is President Obama a problem in this equation? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, it's not about race. It's about power. And until America wakes up and understands that they're trying to put the whole nation into a servitude state, you can call it socialism, you can call it, you know, fascism, you can call it whatever you want to call it. But what I want to know is it's going to be a servitude state. And when you look at what's really going on, if we don't wake up and start taking ownership for our own lives and become independent, we all going to be sitting in the soup line. Talk about come by here. And it won't be a black person, it won't be a white person, it's going to be all of us. I'll be right back.
WSOM, Salem.
Okay, now.
Okay, Bama, go ahead.
Now, this is the thing. My brother says that I would be upset. He said he got upset because he heard a black, he worked as a waiter at a country club, and he heard a white guy use it in a more derogatory way to say, you know, blacks, these bucks have been bred. That's how he said it, you know. And my brother got upset, which I can understand how he said it. I didn't say nothing about genetics. I didn't get into the why of it. All I'm saying is that it's clear if you look at any sport and anyone that we really focus on, we don't focus on badminton and tennis and golf, and we don't focus on those sports. But when you look at the sports that mostly black people focus on, they dominate. It's not that a better – I'm not saying blacks are better than whites, but when it comes to athletics, it's clear that we're more athletic. It's not – you know, just, the brother been playing rugby for 12 weeks, and he was killing. He was a sprinter. Got into rugby, and he killing. They can't lay a finger on him. I'm like, obviously. I mean, he probably, a guy wouldn't even make an NFL team. He might get cut from an NFL team because it's just that much more competitive.
Whites say that blacks make better athletes, and they made better slaves, too.
I don't even want to go there with the slave part, but yeah, I see what you're saying as far as athleticism and strength.
But it's true.
I get you. Hey, I get what you're saying.
Then why did they fire Jimmy the Greek?
Because he's politically incorrect.
Yeah, you're right. It was politically incorrect.
Wasn't Jimmy the Greek said, Jim Brown had said 4 years earlier.
Jim Brown's black.
The reason they fired Jimmy the Greek because of the fear of retaliation with commercials. I'm sorry, not commercials, but boycotting the products that was being advertised on the program. And Jesse Jackson spearheading those sites.
And let me say this too. Let me say this before y'all venture off. I think that the thing is, white folks want to act like they created super black people through their racist slavery, right? But you can go to this, you can go to Nigeria, you can go to other places, and they still athletic. They still doing the same things.
No,
it's not that white folks did a magical thing and made some super Negroes. They want to
be truthful with you on that, Kavina, man. It's not true. Because I have yet to see a heavyweight champion come out of a Nigeria. It seemed like they just lacked something.
No, you're isolating something to boxing. I'm just saying, if you go down the scenario where Alabama was talking about, you still get some great sprinters from Africa.
Out of Africa, yeah.
You still get the who wins the Boston Marathon every year? Who wins these marathons every year? It's not because white folks bred super Negro.
Well, people have said
when
you breed black and white together, you
just
come up with a heck of a special.
Hold up, man. If you take Michael Jordan and Jackie Joyner Kersee and make a child, that might be a super athlete. I'm just saying. I see what you're saying, but that is essentially what they did do. Now, I mean, we know this. We don't want to talk about it, but that's where you
take
the term. The term MF comes from that. That's where they get all that stuff from. I mean, they did do that.
Y'all give the white
human beings are species, just like what
credit.
We call animals are. If you take a black Angus and cross it with a Holstein, you would come up with a superior cattle.
Okay, fine.
In the flavor of his meat and his ability to reproduce.
Okay, fine. Well, let's answer me this question. What super white man created the black people that win the Boston Marathon every year? What super white
Nobody.
Man
Nobody. No, 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 no. We
shut
already.
Up. Shut up.
Covina man, we already saying, I already agree with you that we have certain genetics. We already have a good gene pool. I'm not saying that. But to say that a lot of these American athletes.
Well, what super white black man created swimmers and hammer throwers and shot putters?
Nobody made that claim.
Hey,
I'm arguing out your claim. Don't come up with something that nobody said.
But guys, here's the same context. For years, guys like Sebastian Coe and Jim Fix and those guys were the best long distance runners and everything in the entire world. Up until the point where a guy named Ben Jibjo, I don't know if you guys remember this cat, but his name was Ben Jibjo. He was out of Africa. He came on the scene and he was blowing everybody away. Then all of a sudden you're hearing about the Nigerian runners and the Sudanese runners and all these guys coming out of Africa. Well, nobody knew anything about them because they weren't exposed to the rest of the world. These guys were runners for years. I mean, you're talking about running across a desert.
I don't know of any Nigerian great sprinters.
Well,
you can just study history with Shaka Zulu. Shaka Zulu had impis. Shaka Zulu would have groups of men called impis, IMPI. They would run 40, 50 miles like it's nothing. They just would run it. He would send them somewhere. They'd go fight a war and run all the way back. That's how they were. But we've been doing this for centuries, for millennia. Right.
Yeah, but I'm talking about today when records under organized competition. I mean, they I don't see them.
I can't argue if you take Michael Jordan and breed him with FloJo that you're not going to get a heck of an athlete. I mean,
FloJo was already herself. Fojo all herself was mixed, right?
Yeah.
She was light skinned, but I mean, look at the boy from Colin Kaepernick. You don't see too many guys. Like, Johnny Manziel's a fluke. That's why he's a superstar. Because most time white guys don't date. He plays like a black athlete.
But the thing is, you guys not looking at, Michael Jordan has some parents. They bred. Flo-Jo has some parents. They bred. Super white man didn't come in and create them.
Look,
y'all
get super white man.
Y'all get this mindset. Jimmy the Greek talking about the super white man created.
Wait a minute, hold on. So you telling me that the guys that survived the transatlantic slave trade, survived slavery, weren't superior, strong athletes, physically capable? These were physically capable people, man. I'm not trying to give it credit. I'm saying that these people already were physically capable, and they took it. And to tell me that you ain't going to look at that, if you are white, racist, whatever, hate black people, but you see this guy bailing 50 bales of hay on his back, and you got this female, she doing the same, you looking like, man, that's common sense.
But your super weightlifters was Russians. You ain't had no super weightlifters come out.
We don't even count them.
No.
Okay,
I'm talking about
the Russians and the Germans are very well known for steroids.
You say blacks do too, but you're not going to find no super weightlifters coming out of no sub-Saharan Africa.
Okay,
well,
hold on.
Just
any sport that we don't dominate is because we just don't do it. We just don't. It ain't enough of us doing it. If just like mixed martial arts, if brothers thought they can get out the hood and be famous and wealthy, it'd be millions of brothers doing it. They just don't see it. They don't see it as viable.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. It's 9 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and I hope you're having a good day today here on the 10th of July, 2014. It's beautiful outside. I've got Mark Mangi in studio for me, sitting in for Dr. Brandy and Dr. Matt.
And I'm the designated crazy person today. I'm so excited. What an honor.
Wow. But, you know, you designated crazy. You did good for me.
You know, you ought to have a little badge you can put on your guest, your guest co-host over here.
did you guys straighten out Alabama? Did you guys help him out?
Yeah, it was a crazy conversation.
Good morning, Pianki. Did you guys help him out? Because he needed a little bit of help there. He got
it straight. We understood what we were saying. It's just that. I don't know, Pianki kind of lost it. Not Pianki, but Covina man kind of lost it when he was talking about the super white man breeding, you know, black superstar. I don't know, man.
Can somebody tell me how did it relate to my politics conversation? Did it ever get there?
No, it didn't.
Okay, just checking. I just want to make sure that I wasn't messing up some things because I'm a little weird, and I mess up some stuff, and I just want to make sure it wasn't doing it. What's going on, Pianki? How are you today?
Well, I'm very fine, Tracy, and yourself? I really appreciate your show.
Huh? Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so very much.
I threw a answer and a response in there at the same time. I knew it would tie you up.
Sure did. You know, we said a little bit early, you know it's a little sunny out here with no clouds and no wind, and it's a beautiful day in Northeast Ohio, which is not always happening. I'm not going to die, just so you know that.
How's Jeff doing?
Jeff's on the phone somewhere. Jeff stays on the phone somewhere. He acts like he ain't listening, but he's on the phone because I pulled his mic up. Hey, we want you to give us a call, the number. Hold on. We want you to give us a call, the number 347-945-5229. If you want to, give us a call on the local line. The number is 330-781-9600. Go ahead, Pianchi.
Well, you know, as far as the world scene, geopolitics, everything is about the same as it were when we went to sleep last night, when we woke up this morning.
It's not the same, Priyanki.
Can you elaborate?
Yes. People are really, they didn't wake up this morning.
Well, I said we. I was talking to the ones that's alive here on your program.
That's what I'm saying. They didn't wake up because Obama was playing pool in Texas, and more people are concerned about him playing pool in Texas. And while he was there, you got him, you know, he's down there at the border. You've got, we still have a problem with Congress not getting, being ineffective on both, on all sides. You've got people still being crazy. No one's trying to stop the crime in America. No one wants to read a book. No one wants to take responsibility. And those of us that want to do something are halted by people who don't want things done. Because everybody, and I heard somebody say something over the last couple of weeks, and they said what we need to do is we need to make sure that we are transparent, that we transition, and that we are, it was all about transparency and transitioning. And we are still trying, right now we carry a phone around in our hips, on our purses, in our hands that have no cords, and we take pictures with them and we post them all over the world instantaneously. And we have people who still want to act like we carry around our communication source that has a cord. Things have changed and things are changing, but people don't want to change for the way things are so that they can go into the future. And with every change, you have to make other changes with it. And until we wake up and you said everything is the same as it was yesterday, no, it's not. Things have changed. You know, I was talking to somebody about, you know, senior care yesterday. And right now, we have people who are in nursing homes that don't need to be in nursing homes, but they're still not, can't live, they can't do assisted living. Assisted living is too independent. Staying at home by themselves is too independent. But nursing home is too much. They don't need to be around people with tubes that can't talk and can't breathe. Yet we put our seniors in that care because we haven't come up with a way for a transition in the middle for people who are just going through dementia, who are not quite there yet, so they have lucid moments. So we put them in rooms where everybody's crazy. That's just nuts because we won't open up our eyes and transition and wake up and say we've got a problem here and we need to know how to fix it.
Well, you know, people probably want the transparency, but they're not ready for the surprises.
And, what surprises?
Well, for instance, I was listening to a talk radio show that was hosted by a woman, you know, like your persuasion, and she was making reference about how these policies that people have attained due to the requirements of Obamacare, when they expire and for people to renew them, that the premium is going to be much, much, much greater. And that's going to be the surprise.
You can't tell
them
that.
And what you're going to have is people right back into the same position that they were in the state when they came up with the idea of initiating the program in the beginning.
But you can't tell them that. I mean, you can't tell people. I said this yesterday, and talking about policy, talking about what's going on. You can't tell people that which you're getting free right now is not free. It's not free. There's no way around it. Somebody's paying for it. And after a while, their money runs out. So then what? What happens when the money goes? Who pays?
Margaret Thatcher's big line. The problem with liberalism is sooner or later you run out of other people's money.
So then what?
Well, then we're in trouble. You know, it's I, you know, I look at the world today, and I really come to the conclusion that Barack Obama is going to do what Barack Obama is going to do. Congress is going to do what it's going to do. What bothers me the most is the ignorance of the American public.
But see, this is we keep, and I've really got to get past this Barack Obama thing. I'm not going to give that brother that much credit. Now, he may be the face of bad policy, but he's not engineering this on his own, because nobody of color has that much power in America or in the world ever.
Well, I'll agree with you on that. My question is,
who are the faces behind the face, and what is their agenda, and why is it that they will not listen to us to let us stand on our own 2 feet, and why won't we wake up and do something about it?
Here's the problem.
Tracy.
I don't care whether I think the issue for me is these people are going to do what these people are going to do. Our system is set up in a series of checks and balances, and the problem is two main sources of checks and balances have fallen off the face of the earth. The first being the Congress, who's not using the power of the purse to stop some of this, and the second is the press, which has been unbelievably silent,
but,
and they're part and parcel of what's going on.
But Mark, this is the problem, and don't interrupt me until I finish, guys. Listen to this: the reason why the press and the media are part and parcel is because he who controls the White House controls the FCC, who controls the press. You got to understand what's going on right now. These guys are working in concert with each other based upon their own agenda. Because remember, at one time, you had to have – you could only have a certain percentage of any media concentration in one market. And then when that changed with the Telecommunications Act of 1996 with Bill Clinton, we have these major conglomerates. Now we have newspapers who own television stations, who own radio stations, who own billboards. And right now, you're getting – when you watch television, you're watching one voice. Different ways of saying it, but one voice. And so you don't have any blending, no adverse reaction to anything. It's all one. It's because it's by design. And they're getting ready to do it again in a major way, especially in our urban settings, because they need to make sure the people that are a part of the poverty, who like entertainment, are flooded with bad information so that they do not think. This is all about becoming zombies. Do as I say, not as I do, and don't ask me any questions about it.
You're right. You're right. And I'm going to go a step further. The relationship between the press and the current government is, you say it's rooted in the FCC, which is probably true, but it's more than that. It's become incestuous. These folks, they talk about lobbyists going back and forth. The relationship between the owners of the three major networks and this particular administration is hiring brothers, hiring sisters, hiring spouses, bringing in whose brother's been brought into the government, and back and forth. And I look at this and I'm thinking, oh my, you know. And then you couple that with people, the reporters, who have gone into this cocktail circuit in New York City and Washington, and you add on top of that plain outright corruption. It's scary, and I don't think this country has seen anything like it since Grant or Warren Harding.
You want me to tell you what this reminds me of? Youngstown.
Yes.
Circa 1950s and beyond.
Yeah.
Can I ask my
tell
question?
Tell me it does not.
No, you know what?
The country looks like Youngstown.
And that's why we can recognize it, because we live it.
Tell me it does not look like Youngstown.
It looks like Youngstown.
It looks like Youngstown politics.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like Chicago politics, because Chicago politics is a little bit different. Youngstown politics is the poster child for what's going on in America today.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Can I ask
a little bit scary.
Yeah, go ahead, Covina Man.
Okay, this is a question I had asked an hour ago. I'm still waiting for the answer.
Go ahead.
Here it is. The GOP has lost the popular vote in 3 out of the last 4 presidential elections. What policies could the GOP run on which would turn around their statistical minority? Give me or us a scenario where the GOP can win in 2016 their popular vote or electoral college.
Hold on. Let me ask. If they will listen to what I have to say and understand that we need to make sure that they have jobs. Economic development and education is going to change, and policies based around making sure that everyone has access to a good education, and when they get that education, has access to a good job if they want to work. Making sure, revamping the Head Start program so that they start implementing ways that will teach our children through Head Start and beyond that has a measurable mastery program or component to it, so that when children matriculate through the processes of learning, they've mastered what they need to get to go to the next step. Excuse me, that's one. Secondly, making sure that if you're getting assistance, it is a vehicle for success, not a vehicle for sustainability. The problem with the programming that we have today called welfare and AIDS-dependent children and jobs and family services, it is sustainability. It does not give you the opportunity for you to make your own independent money. And then taking unemployment and making it a stopgap. And then setting up policies that when you are laid off from work while you're on unemployment, your credit can be resolved. I'm setting up policies that while you are unemployed, if you lose your job, I'm talking about active unemployment. I'm not talking about you just quit your job because you don't want to work. I'm talking about active unemployment. Because what happens is people go from making a livable wage to getting a stopgap check that doesn't meet their bills. And while you're on unemployment, you're not allowed to work anywhere else because they take the money that you're making away from you from the unemployment and then tax you on it all, which sends you backwards instead of sending you forward. Making people, revamping student loans to where, not to where you don't pay it back, but to where it is a sliding scale based upon your income, not based upon what they want to get back from you. So that if you get out of school and you have $100,000 in student loans, those banks that loaned you the money, they're going to go by your income and not by what they want you to have, because people are going into debt based on student loans because their job is only paying $35,000 a year and their student loan payment is $35,000 a year. And you can't live like that. That's what we need to do as a GOP. Then we need to actually make sure that we don't overregulate and we have incentives for people to hire people, so that we have jobs, which is going to make them pay more, work better, and become more qualified. We need to stop the crazy talk about, you know, let's legalize drugs where you can't go to work, and when you go to work, you're going to be a zombie. Come on now. That doesn't make sense. But those are the kinds of policies that need to really happen within the GOP to go and bring everyone back together again, the independents as well as the conservatives. Liberals will never agree with me. Passing out free money, you know, increasing minimum wage does not help you get off of the minimum wage hamster wheel. But making it to where you have a wage and then you have the skills to attain a better wage does. But that comes from education, whether it be financial education, whether it be from political education, whether it be from, you know, moral education. You need to know how to get to the next step if you want to.
Well, Tracy, there's some things the federal government should not even be involved in at all. For instance, you mentioned about the legalization of drugs. That should be a state-by-state issue, I think. How can you have a whole state of people that are willing to look at drugs in a whole different view than a body called the Congress? That is totally crazy. Leave it up to the states. And the same thing should apply to the definition of what a marriage is. We're not saying that two people can't do whatever they want to in the confines of their privacy, or maybe they need to have a license that applies to those of the same sexual persuasion.
But let me say this. We have right now, we need to make sure that when people are incarcerated, we were doing some screenings last night for judicial candidates. And if you can't read by the third grade, what do you think your job's going to be when you get in, when you become 16? Why is it we're not dealing with rehabilitation within our juvenile justice system and parental counseling that comes with the child when the child gets into trouble? Why are we not dealing with that there?
Government? Or is it the job of the state?
But let me say this. I agree with it being a part of the state, but the money needs to come from somewhere. And instead of me sending $3 billion down to the border to send people back to Honduras, we need to send the $3 billion to our states and make sure that the people here can come out of the same problems that we have now, because right now all we're doing is creating more problems.
Tracy, I don't have a quarrel with what you had mentioned as what your opinion was, because that's what I asked. But I just want to point out that if you look at any GOP candidate, those aren't the issues in which they're talking about, except for the deregulation part. That's been the way for 50 years. But I'm just saying that the policies that they run on would be the following: Benghazi. They run on impeachment. They run on Obamacare. They run on abortion. They run on same-sex marriage and tax cuts for the rich. Now, you might have a different set of scenarios, which is fine and dandy. I'm not disagreeing with them. I'm just saying no GOP candidate is going to be running on cutting student loans. They're going to be running on getting rid of student loans, period.
But can I but this is the problem. This is where I want you to understand. This is where it comes to. The presidential nominee is supposed to be running on the GOP or the RNC platform. This goes back to education again. The RNC platform that is done through the matriculation of the states, which we feed into the RNC, we ought to be setting that platform as we go in the next year and a half, and I pray to be on the platform committee this year, that will have those things in that platform so that they can address them. That's how it's supposed to work. But because most people don't know how it's supposed to work, it doesn't work that way.
I understand, Tracy, but when there's an election, it says on the election, it says Clinton, Gore versus Bush and Dole. That's how it reads. It doesn't read
no. Listen,
platform against Democrat. That's how it reads.
No. Listen, however it reads, that we're looking at those persons are personalities that are supposed to be driving the RNC platform. That's how it's supposed to work. Now it's up to the Republicans and the Democrats to take a look at the platform and then make sure that they align a candidate that meets the platform. That's why when we go to the convention that everybody is excited about, that's why we adopt the platform before we nominate the nominee. And the nominee is supposed to run on the platform that we have actually set for the nation, for the RNC. And then we go out and take it to the people of the United States of America and ask them to vote on our nominee and our platform. Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
I think the question that was originally asked, I don't disagree with anything you've said, you know, but I don't think the issue is policy. I think the issue is Republicans, as a general rule, have been behind the curve in their political activity. They don't know how to politic. They don't know how to get their message out, and it's a perennial problem. You could have the best policy in the world, but when you've got a monolithic group of people, and I think the thing that's amazed me most about the Democratic Party over the last 6 years is they usually kind of fracture, but they are talking points. Just I've never seen anything like it. War on woman, racist. And this message is perpetrated through the press right to the point where Candy Crowley in the debates 2 years ago actually interjected her opinion falsely into the debate as to what was going on. And I think probably cost Romney the election when she did that. And the Republicans need to know how to politic. And Tracy, off the air, I want to. We saw an example of that last night in our interviews.
Okay.
And I'll show you the difference. We do not have a unified message. We don't know how to get around a press that's opposed to us. We don't. And I see some improvement with Reince Priebus, who's now going to constrict the primary. These are political issues. I think our message is fine.
The message. Let me see. The message is somewhat fine, and a lot of it, but the articulation and execution of the message is bad, because when you go down to the average person, because to be perfectly honest, if you look at the class system and who's in what class, so you got middle class, upper class, and then you have overclass, and then you've got the lower middle class. I am still a part of the from economic standpoint, I'm still a part of the lower middle class economically. And so taxes don't affect me. A lot of things that are going on and things you're talking about, we need a tax break, we need to do this, that doesn't affect me. And so we as Republicans need to come down to the grassroots level and do grassroots speak. And what I just spoke about was grassroots speak. We say we want to cut the program, not revamp the program.
Right.
And so when I say we want to cut Head Start, I say we need to revamp Head Start. We need to put a Sylvan component within Head Start to make sure that our children are beginning to read. When we talk about age-dependent children and welfare and food stamps, we say cut food stamps, and we allow them to say it. It's not about cutting it, but it's about helping me get from – tell me that you're going to tell me – you're going to teach me how to fish, but you're going to make sure that I got a fishing pole – hold on, Pianchi. I got a fishing pole and a fishing line. But don't tell me you're going to teach me how to fish and then tell me to take my head and put it in the water like a bear and see if I can catch a fish with my teeth. And that's how we speak it.
Our message goes, and I'm going to, you know, starting with Joe Biden, standing up there in front of an African-American audience to say they're going to put you back in chains. Now, as abhorrent as that statement is, and there's a lot of jokes around it, that resonates. When you have what happened with the Supreme Court, and they come out and say they're going to take away your contraception, they're against women's health, and the press pounds that message in, anyone who had half a brain and could read the decision knows that's not what happened, that's not what this is about. I saw no pushback from the Republicans. None.
But look at the Supreme Court when they talked about the Voting Rights Act. Everybody thinks that they actually cut the Voting Rights Act. What they told Congress to do is that they need to establish laws that go up against all 50 states, not just the 9.
But we're not getting the message out.
Because we don't listen. Go ahead, Pianchi.
And not only that, why is this that we have to tax the rich? One of the reasons why come everyone in America is not rich is because they don't want to put in what's required to become rich. You know, the average Joe can take, when he gathered around his homies, they may be talking about basketball scores and football scores. Or they may, if you're going to entertain your homies, you order a pizza, take them to Popeyes or McDonald's. But a rich person cannot take their clients when they're talking about business to a Popeyes and McDonald's. They have to take them to a 5-star restaurant. So it costs more and requires more to maintain that particular level of status in this country. So why is this stuff about always taxing the rich more than what the rich is paying now?
Yeah, I was going to add this. I think we're in 6 months, it's July right now, in 6 months we'll all be living, hopefully God willing, that everybody from, you know, Herman Cain to Mitt Romney to Cruz and all the other guys, they all will be in Iowa and New Hampshire campaigning in 6 months for the president. And nobody's going to be asking about those issues that, you know, Tracy had brought up. They're not bad issues, but not going to be asking about that.
But,
they're going to be asking
about... Hold on, let me finish.
I got to get this in.
Because I got to take my break, and I want to pull up South Carolina before I go to break. Listen to this. The reason why they won't pull it up is because we don't have enough people sitting at the table telling them that they need to pull this up. Are you following me? See, this is my problem with us. I need to have South Carolina, I need to have myself, I need to have Jeff sitting at the table telling them this is what we need to be talking about here. So you need to add this to your platform of conversation. And because we as this class of people, we're always leaning to one side. We're never sitting at the board table where decisions are being made. So no one gets to hear what really goes on, what's really going on. Good morning, South Carolina.
Hey, Tracy, sorry about that. I had to drop out because I had to go into a little take care of some business. But, you know, you got to have, even though you don't agree on everything, you got to be at the table to find out what's going on. If you're not at the table, you're out of the loop.
I gotta take my break. I'll be right back.
Let's talk for a moment.
Hello.
Hello.
What's up, guys? I'm just pulled up here to a piece of property that's getting ready to be auctioned off here.
Ah, you got on your suit and tie, huh?
A little bit. Just curious if this is part of that property. Looks like it. That's an actual another house on the back side of this thing. Oh, wow. Yeah, see, this is the kind of stuff we need to...
I just think that Tracy is being self-deluded. She thinks that she's putting more importance on what she's doing, of course, because that's what she's doing, but she's putting more importance on it than anyone else is putting on it. It's like Jeff and South Carolina Tracy show up to a meeting. The white folks already know that they don't represent nobody. There's nobody behind them. It's just those three people that's showing up. So the white people know they already have their vote, those three black people. They're not going to go out and get, like, 30 of those people. They just got those three that showed up. If you're a black person, you show up to a GOP meeting. They like, oh, that's that. You know, they know it's Uncle Tom, dude. They're not deluding. Like all of a sudden, there's black folks showing up out of the middle of the ghetto about to support the GOP. They
well,
know
you know,
what
I disagree with you, Kamina America. We had a black Republican, I can't think of his name, a young man, and he represented a damn near 98%. Well, I'm going to say 98%, but he represented a white district in St. Charles County. On his and he came and talked. He came down into the city and hung out at meetings that was being held on social community meetings on different subjects.
We don't disagree. I think that's where I think Tracy, Jeff, and South Carolina, they represent 98% of white people too. That's my point. They're not representing black people.
Got black people that's in the Republicans. 20% of any election votes garnered for a Republican candidate comes from black people.
No, black. Any statistic can show you that GOP gets anywhere from 3 to 5% of the black vote. 3 to 5, that's it.
But you had some Republicans. Nixon got 20% of black voters.
Now,
his votes came from blacks.
Yeah, in 1910, they probably got more. I mean, we're talking about today's politics, Bianchi.
Why do black folks get all the Democrats get all the black votes?
Because of the
stuff that they did down in Mississippi.
Yeah, the GOP is the enemy.
We're gonna give you this and we're gonna give you that, and we're gonna keep you this and keep you in chains. That's basically what they're saying. But we don't see that.
Yeah, well, most black people, the 95-plus percent of black people, see the GOP as our mortal enemy. They are the enemy.
Why?
Incarnate.
Why? Explain to me why. Why are they your enemy?
Racism.
Man, the GOP is not your mortal enemy. The GOP has just as much claim to good points in it. That goes to show you the intelligence. I mean, that's why come you hear them. That's why come you hear them champion for more Head Start. That's why come you hear them champion for more Department of Education influence in your public school. When you put out that type of a citizen with the type of mentality that you just got through describing, what Democrat would want to get rid of that?
Right. Well, it is what it is, whether you can agree with it or not. But I'm just saying, 95% of black folks are in the Democratic Party. You got maybe
35%. And that could be an indication of the ignorance.
It could be. I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm just saying.
So who would want them part of them? I mean, I wouldn't want a shortstop that boot every third ball that comes to him on my defensive team.
Exactly. So that's why they're the enemy, and that's it. Because that's what they see.
Listen. You know what? That's just totally asinine. I'm going to tell you why. There's an old saying that says, keep your friends close, but keep your enemies closer.
Yes, sir.
And what black people are doing is they're alienating their enemy. You got an enemy out there, and you're just saying, well, we're gonna go against you. What happens when that damn enemy becomes the person in power?
Well, we saw what happened when Bush was in the office. We saw what happened when Reagan was in office.
No. Black people, when Reagan was in office, black people prospered.
Black unemployment had been under 10% more times for a longer period of time under Republicans since Nixon through Obama than it has under Democrats.
The GOP has always been pushing policies to keep black folks underemployed. They might have jobs, sweeping tables or you know, whatever, but it's always been an excuse for police brutality. There's always been an excuse for putting poor black people in prison.
Then why the hell so many Mexicans are coming up here then?
That's a different subject. I'm talking about.
Why was black unemployment less than 10% more for longer periods of time, durations under Republicans than it have been under Democrats?
They had no problem running deficits when they were in office. No problem whatsoever. So they'll borrow however much money they need to get the employment rate down, and then as soon as the bottom falls out, then a Democrat come in and they.
No business person makes money with high unemployment. Come on now.
Exactly.
Did you just ignore what I said? Did you just ignore the deficit creating that they do when the GOP gets in? The deficit goes crazy. Did you just ignore that?
Well, I agree that under Bush spent money like a drunken sailor too.
And Reagan too, and the Bush before him.
Yeah, and the problem I have with everybody what he's saying, I do not agree that during the Reagan time, black people, everything was good for them. I'm sorry, it wasn't. A lot of black people would tell you during the Reagan time it was bad for them. I do not agree with that.
From Nixon through Obama, black people unemployment, the employment of black employees have been under 10% unemployed more time for a longer duration of time than they were under Democrats. Now, being able to work, is that not a sign of doing well?
Exactly.
No, that's not a sign of doing well. I would ask you what kind of job you did.
You rather be unemployed.
I would have...
Let me see you move. Let me see you move.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. Mark Mangy's here with me, and it is 46 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock, here on WSOM. I just miss Michael Jackson. I'm sorry. Wow. I'm glad to hear new music coming out from us. When you're dead, you're not gone now.
Yeah.
It's kind of awesome. Hopefully they can resurrect some other people out there, because I know they have some other music out there somewhere for some other old people that died on me. Because they could pull up some Whitney and some Luther Vandross music and do that with the same thing with that. That'd be really kind of cool.
You don't know my rule for life.
What's that?
The dead person's Christmas music. I don't listen to any dead person's Christmas music.
You don't listen to Como anymore?
Oh, jeez. You know, the poor...
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the one I used to know. Come on, now you don't listen to Nat King Cole.
No, and I don't listen to Bing Crosby.
Oh,
you
come
know,
on.
I turned them off. I mean, my goodness,
no, Mark,
there's
Mark.
All sorts of talented people around today.
But Mark,
now,
no,
what with Justin Timberlake's a good song, though, by the way.
But you know, Justin got to do something in life that Michael, that he didn't get to do in death, which was actually sing with Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Come on now. Where else but in America can you sing with a dead man?
Well, they brought Elvis. Remember on American Idol, they did the.
They brought Elvis back.
They brought Elvis back, and now it's more the Fast and Furious thing. The last time I read, that, you know, with Paul Walker.
Yeah, Paul Walker. Yeah, they digitized that.
They're going to finish the movie.
Same thing with the other movie too. With the other guy that died from the OD. He OD'd.
Yeah.
With digital computing, yeah, absolutely.
Digital computing, isn't that? And look how good it is. There was a commercial, I forget for what it was, but it had Audrey Hepburn.
Sitting in the back seat.
Roman Holiday. Sitting,
yes.
You know, it was good.
You know what?
Good.
We need to do some
practical tests with
some.
That was Dove.
Dove
Chocolate. Yeah.
Yeah, Dove Chocolate.
But seriously, don't you think Audrey Hepburn's head and neck, and I mean, doesn't it look kind of tiny?
Spooky?
Yeah.
She was tiny. But this South Carolina, but check this out. I think we ought to do some, like, practical jokes on people. And we ought to, like, put people, they're dead people, and put them in sitting in the room when they wake up in the morning drinking a cup of coffee, and they come around the corner.
Tracy, that's not a practical joke, man. That's somebody coronary.
That ain't right, is it? That ain't right.
There's a lot of dead people I don't want to see, believe me.
Oh, but can you just imagine the facial expression? That would be a good, I mean, you know, Candid Camera? This is better than Candid.
Our own Weekend with Bernie's.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You bring dead people back to life, have them sitting there playing tennis and all that. You sit down and you watch Arthur Ashe playing tennis and don't tell anybody.
I bring back Hitler.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
Geez. Good morning. Speaking
good
of the
morning.
Dead coming to life.
Oh, boy, now, this is my friend.
Who's your friend?
Who just made that? No, that was not so blind, Mike.
No, that was South Carolina.
Oh, boy. After he's been sending out stuff this morning already on Facebook, I got you. But anyway, during the break, Bianchi brought out something very clear. She said that African-American people are more employed under Republican administrations than they are under Democrats.
That's not
and
true, Jeff.
Hold on, Stanley.
Stanley. Go ahead.
No.
Stanley,
wait, let him finish.
Go ahead.
Bianchi, is that what you said?
Yes, what I said Nixon. Let me clarify. Since Nixon through Obama, black Americans have been under 10% for a longer duration of time in months. That's what they measured by months than they were under Democrats.
Okay, now here's the thing. Here's the key. The Obama administration said they added 200 and something jobs last month, and they quote all of these jobs that they had. And somebody tell me whether I'm right or not that they said about 68% to 72% of them are part-time jobs.
I'm not quite sure, but I think that's about right, Jeff.
I think that's about right. And my point is this, Stanley. You can never, ever do good by raping the people and expecting businesses to go along with it. They're not going to do it. That's why $2.5 trillion is sitting in banks right now doing nothing. They're not. They're trying to wait this sucker out. So you got 2 years to go, and they can't wait. 2016, you're going to have a boom in our economy, and you're going to have some executive order reducing because all of this foolishness that he destroyed the coal industry, energy in this country has to be reversed. And it's going to take 8 years to reverse his 4 years of doing. And that is what's going on. No, I'm sorry. The policies of the conservatives are about business. And when you're about business, you're about the people being able to find a job and work and take care of themselves. That's what it's about. The world, one more thing, Tracy. The world going to hell in a handbasket here. Somebody's on my site with the poorest area in America is white and Republican. Well, shoot, the man destroyed their industry, which is coal. He destroyed it totally. So what do you expect them to be? You expect them to be prosperous? They're still going to vote Republican because they know the Republicans want you to work. Go ahead.
Can I come back to what he said, Tracy?
Go ahead, Stanley. Good morning.
Okay, first of all, Bianchi, you're wrong. I just did the research right now in 2 minutes, so you're wrong. And they did some research. Two economists did the research. I'll send you the link in Blog Talk and everything. And they said, and I'm going to just quote what they said. Okay, they said they have even the figure that says under Democratic president, black family income grew an average of $895 annually. Compared to under Republican, it just drove to $142. The black unemployment rate fell to 7.9% across 27 years of Democratic leadership. But
what 27 years?
Wait. Let me finish, Jeff. I let you finish. I'll send you the blog, and you can look at it. Because you're going to tell me this and this. I let you finish.
Let
me finish.
I just want to know what 27 years, Sammy. That's all.
Okay. I'm going to send you the thing. It's going to show you the graph. The 27 years of leadership, but it went up to 13.7 during 28 years of Republican. Across the year of Democratic leadership, black poverty declined to 23.6%, but grew up to 3% with Republican in the White House. So you are wrong, Bianchi. That's not true.
Well, that's not what I said.
The blog.
That's not what I said. Let me explain to you, Stanley. You liberals get things out of perspective. Go through from Nixon's time, 1972, up to through Obama, and each month check the unemployment rate for black Americans.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
You would find that black unemployment was less than 10% for more months under Republican domination, a Republican leadership, than it was ever under Democrats. And I got it here someplace. I have to find it.
Well, Bianchi, I have the link also. Go ahead.
Stanley, if you look at overall, and when we talk about this, there is a proven statistic. And actually, if you give me a minute or if you email me at TracyWinbush@gmail.com or Tracy@TracyAndFriends.com, I will give you the information. It is statistically shown.
Tracy, I have
I can give you the labor statistics, and it is statistically.
I can give you the same thing also, Tracy.
Stanley, let me finish. Statistically shown that African Americans fare better. Now we're not talking about all African Americans. We're talking about the majority of African Americans fare better under a Republican administration than they do a Democrat administration in the last 30 years. That during the steel mill times, it was a little, when steel was and big industry, it was a little bit different. But from Reagan forward, we grew under Reagan. But right now, as African Americans, just as black people in general, we are not doing very well when it comes to work and employment because of our educational attainment.
But
we need to be honest. Let me finish. Jeez. Our educational attainment is limiting us in our advancement, and because of the lack of us having any jobs, because remember, African-American companies, we start companies, but we can't sustain them because we don't know how, and we're not networked into the system so that we can grow. And so when you don't have industry within the African-American communities, and if you don't have to where you're getting contracts in the African-American community, you don't tend to gain. That's why right now, even as the unemployment numbers tend to be declining, in the African-American community as well as African-American youth, they tend to be growing still. You understand that, right?
Yeah,
right
now,
now,
I understand what you're saying, Tracy, but do you understand what I just said to you?
I said to you,
word for word, what I didn't come from me. It came from a study. It came from what I read, and I can send you the link. So how can you explain? You're going to come with your facts?
Where did you?
Stanley,
I prefaced my conversation. I said, email me, and I will send you the statistics.
Okay.
I said that. Did I not?
I'll send you.
But what
can you look at what I'm going to bring you? Can you look at what I'm going to bring you? Because we have a problem.
Absolutely.
You're telling me
what I'm saying.
You
have
to tell me your part.
From the Bureau of Labor, from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, it will show you. The Bureau. I'm not talking about just, you know, I'm not talking about a poll or anything else. I'm not talking about.
No,
opinion.
I'm not talking about a poll.
I'm not talking about a liberal study. I'm talking about from the Bureau of
Labor
Statistics. It actually shows. But my question is, why is it right now? With the economy and the unemployment numbers going in a decline, why are the numbers in the African American community still tending to rise? You understand that we're still growing,
yes.
We're at double figures. How do you do that? And no one addresses women. Not only does it happen, but nobody says it. When have you heard this? You ain't heard it on Tom Joyner. You ain't heard it on Fox News. You ain't heard it on MSNBC. You haven't heard it on CNN. You haven't heard it on CNBC. You haven't heard it on Bloomberg. Who was talking about you? You ain't heard it on BET. You ain't heard it on Radio 1. Who in the heck is talking about how we're going to get our kids a job and get them a better education?
Hello?
Hello?
I told you, Tracy, the solution is until we don't.
Go ahead. Who was that? Who said hello?
It's Pat 269, yeah. Just to answer that question. That's because the black business class is defunct. So you use that to make
it
nope.
This is Tracy and Friends. Listen to Tracy every weekday from 9 a.m. to noon on News Talk 600. Visit our website for more info about Tracy and Friends at www.tracyandfriends.com. That's T-R-A-C-E-Y and friends.com. Tracy and Friends.
Stanley.
Hello?
Stanley. Black unemployment since January 1972. Through July 2012, which was 487 months. The number of months black unemployment has been under 10%, and under each president, Clinton 44 months, under Bush 53 months, Nixon 20 months, 117 months, 20% of the total period during the 40-year period, date range from January 72 to July 2012, 40 years, 7 months, 370 months, over 10%. Their unemployment was over 10% for 370 months of that period of time under Democrats. So, Stanley, you had to go through, and it really, since July 2012, Obama's been in, and we
Bianchi,
all know that
Bianchi,
black unemployment has been over 10%.
Bianchi, I'm looking at the graph right now. If you start the Reagan from
it's
the
not a graph. You got to go
wait,
to the Bureau.
Wait,
you have to go to the Bureau. You have to go to the Bureau of Labor.
Wait, Bianchi.
How many months
does
your graph show? How many months
Bianchi,
did the graph show?
Bianchi, I'm looking at it. I'm looking from the start, and they're showing it the graph. They're showing
when do they start?
From,
what day do
they
start?
From every president from the start, from all the way to to the first president in 1950 all the way to 2000 until Clinton. They didn't go more further than this. And they go from stat to stat. They start from when Reagan, basically to give it a point, like when Reagan started.
How many months was black unemployment above 10% under Clinton?
Point? Can I finish my point and then you could come back? They go from the point of when Reagan started his administration. The unemployment was about 18 or 19%, but it was very high when he started. Then it dropped. It dropped completely, but
Stanley,
it started very high.
All right, I hear what you're saying, but listen to what I'm saying.
And wait,
every month, wait
a
minute.
When he went to Clinton and everything from the card, and that's what they're doing. They're telling you all this, and that we have to look in factor two.
How many months under Clinton does it show that black unemployment was under 10%?
Listen, I don't know. I didn't look at that point.
That's what I'm talking about. You looking at a graph that's showing something else, and I'm talking about
month. I'm looking at a graph that shows what
Tell me then. How many months under Clinton was black unemployment under 10%?
Okay, let me find out about that. But you,
I'm coming up here with that off-the-wall
stuff,
man.
Are you saying that what I said before wasn't true? When I said that the
you counted what I said when I said this, that black unemployment in America was under 10% for more months under Republican presidents than it ever have been under Democratic presidents since Nixon.
Okay, but you're basically how you making that calculation? Are you going through the every month and saying basically
you go through
you
every
that,
month?
Wait,
absolutely.
I'm not really sure I understand. How are you making that calculation?
But I can, Bianchi, and Stanley, I can say this. If you go back and you track black unemployment, President Obama has taken office until now,
mm-hmm.
I can guarantee you it's going up exponentially.
Of course.
Every month. Every freaking month it has. And that's the deal. Because of his policies. Nothing else. Nothing else but the freaking policies. And the thing is, once again, when businesses aren't investing money and creating jobs, you don't have any employment. You know the blacks are usually the last hired, first fired. You know that. So now a Michigan man is absolutely correct. There's no black business class because the government policies of the Democrats have wiped them out. Wiped them out. And that's what pisses me off more than you could ever know about Democrats. They don't mean us any good. They give you programs to keep your black ass in one place. That's what they do. That's what they do. They make sure you can't do nothing but work and vote for them. Now, that's all you're going to do under them. That's what they put out to do. That's why they were so smart with civil rights. This is what Johnson put out. He didn't like black people. He said, we'll lose the South, but them niggas will vote for us for the next 400 years. 200 years, excuse me.
Understand.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Hello, Jim.
And you got black politicians just as lecherous also.
Right.
Because
what all come out of these black politicians'
mouths? The same old help me, sue me programs.
Yeah. But the flip side to that is, even under with the Republicans, you still don't have a clear plan that would, or clear ideals that will actually get blacks more competitive in the marketplace. Now, as far as the statistics that Stanley and Bianchi are arguing about, well, what are you talking about? Whenever a new slave quarters open up, of course you're going to need more, you got more jobs making up beds. Now, so what do I mean? The unemployment rate of blacks, just because there are Republicans in there, that's true. Republicans tend to create more jobs. Talking about doing something specifically for the black community, you wouldn't want to use that as a banner of pride to say, hey, you ought to vote Republican because they're going to create more jobs.
That is the point. They do things that's conducive to make it possible for you to start businesses and also have jobs.
Now, that's where I was getting ready to go. Now, that part is not true. They do not do more to help start we'll find those statistics, Bianca, where
they do. Listen, Michigan man.
Whoa.
Michigan man. They not going to say, hey, they not going to say, hey, black person, okay, this is this I'm for listening. You. No, what they do is they make things overall where you can get in and play at the table.
Okay, now watch this. Now let me show you how that's a bunch of crap talk and not nothing to back it up. If you want to look at the rate and fall of black-owned businesses, first you would have to go to the interest groups and the statistics that would help you find that information, like your black chamber of commerce and things of that nature, your black business associations. There's no information that backs that up, that when Republicans are in, you have more black startups and the income. There's no documentation for that. So
that's not true, Michigan man. I had a guy come to me and say that no blacks benefit from the SBA. I showed him a whole page of black businesses that benefit from the SBA and AB certification.
Sometimes you got to be quiet.
Okay. And then gather that information about black-owned startups and get it.
See? So you gotta, you have to back it down. Silence sometimes is just golden.
I don't know what to do with this. Silence more than a few seconds, I go crazy. I need to have a little, noise.
A little noise?
That's good.
I miss this guy. I really do.
He was talented. What a talented musician.
Hey, you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. And I'm here sitting with Mark Mangi. He's sitting in for Dr. Brandy and Dr. Matt.
I want to talk about health.
Oh, I just got a text, and Matt said, "Talk about no donuts."
Yeah, I don't have any donuts here today because I overslept and I didn't have time to buy them. But I'm sitting here drooling, thinking about going for a piece of pizza after the show's over.
Yum.
Ooh.
Ooh.
You know, Wedgwood is right up the street.
So is the Amish place.
I like Wedgwood better. For pizza.
For pizza.
Italians make pizza.
I'm...
You gotta understand, Italians make pizza.
Yes.
Amish make chicken. Italians make pizza.
But Italians wasn't the originator of pizzas, though. I think it came out of Spain, didn't it, Mark?
I don't think the Italians originated a whole lot of anything. They didn't originate pasta. They didn't originate tomatoes. I'm going to suspect that the pizza came from someplace else too, but we do it better.
If you want to have great Italian food that may have come out of somewhere else, Youngstown, Ohio has some of the best Italian food in the planet, and we got pizza. And
we got wonderful pizza.
We got pizza between Coca's and Wedgwood.
Mm-hmm. I like
pizza.
I like
did come out
and,
of Spain.
The Elmton and Elmton.
Yeah, Elmton and
Uptown. The Elmton. The Uptown. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Yeah,
I can hear you.
I heard you earlier said you need to be at the table, you and South Carolina and Jeff. Now, do you have the right key? Maybe. I mean, do they have a seat at the table for you? What happened? Did they take up your
Pardon
chair?
Me? No, you missed my
Did
point. You need more than
take...
No, listen. Huh? The problem is, see, this is it. This is something that we need to learn. You don't have to go everywhere alone. And we need to learn how to take people with us. See, we got a syndrome in communities where we want to be the only one sitting at the table because someone else may have a different opposing opinion.
South Carolina and Jeff, could you name the black organizations that you all are attached to that you speak for?
Yeah. I'm black in America.
Name them.
We need black organizations.
Okay. You want to go there? Let's talk about Head Start. I have been involved with Head Start for over 16 years, in different capacity as a Head Start parent. also as a policy council chairperson,
now,
as a state,
South Carolina,
as a state representative.
And
hold on. He wants you to say that you're part of the NAACP and the Urban League that's bankrupt across the country. He wants to say you to tell you that you've been part of the Legislative Black Caucus, where when you go
no,
and
I want
speak
you
to them,
no, no, no.
Hold on,
I
no.
want you to name the
no.
ones you're a part of, not I want you to name
no, no,
the
no.
ones you're a part of, not name the ones you're
not
a part of.
Listen, I'm telling you,
name,
I'm not
name
a part
the ones
of,
that you're a part of.
I am not. Don't repeat the question. I heard you the first time. I'm not a part of any of them because they don't support me. And if you're not going to support me, I'm definitely not going to waste my time and come and support you. I'm not crazy. See, that's stupidity.
Tracy,
the last thing I am is stupid.
That's the same reason I don't belong to any of the National Blind Associations. They ain't doing nothing for me. They're rowdy behaves when they're in public. They're an embarrassment, and only the people who got nothing going on in their life join those associations and want to make themselves victims, professional victims.
And I'm not a victim.
What are you I'm talking about how American politics works, and you guys are talking about something else.
Oh, I'm not playing around with you today because
I'm
not doing that. I told you I'm not doing. I'm not doing stupid today. That just doesn't work. It doesn't work for me, and I'm not doing it. But the reason, if you want to know who I represent the people of my community. And anybody that wants to go somewhere, if they get on the bus with me, I'm going somewhere, and I'll take you with me. I'm not going to leave you behind. But I'm not going to join an organization that wants to keep you in the same place you were last year. I hope we're going to move forward every year. Because I'm tired of people telling them and them becoming a part of an organization and nobody winning except for the heads of them. That's not how this is supposed to work. A leader takes somebody with them. And I know some of you don't believe in Jesus Christ, but for those of us that do, Jesus never went anywhere without taking his people with him. And I don't think we're supposed to just go in front of them and leave everybody else behind. Mm-hmm. Now, they can put that in their pipe and smoke it. What, Mark?
Good rules to live by. Good rules to live by.
Mark,
hey, Mike, how you doing?
Fine, thank you. Pizza was invented by the Spanish, Mark. It was actually invented by a gentleman named Don Kianchovy.
Who?
Are you serious?
No, I was making a play on Don Quixote.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Oh, you know, it's my brain's processing over here.
You are a typical lawyer. You're just too stiff. You know, everything is that a fact?
Yeah.
No, this is not a deposition. It's
no,
show.
I saw stiff. That's not stiff.
I like that. That's pretty good. And I'm still hungry. We sat through a 4-hour meeting last night, and the chairman didn't bring food.
And wouldn't let me order food.
We wanted to order food, but he wouldn't let us order food. And that, you know, I'm sitting here this morning. I don't have any food.
You know, it used to be you and I used to get together, and we always ate well.
Yes.
Now it's getting to the point. Now we get together and we are both starving.
Yes.
There's something wrong with this.
We need to take control of the situation.
Yes. I've lost 6 pounds in the last 2 weeks, and all I did was just cut back to half of what I used to eat. That's all I did.
I'm not trying. What, Stanley?
No, I dropped 7 pounds in maybe a week and a half or 2 weeks just by eating more plant-based diet, the way the doctor said.
Yeah.
I don't want to eat plant-based diet. I want to eat.
Well, Tracy, you don't want to. You're not ready to do everything possible to lose your weight.
I'm not trying to lose weight right now. I'm just trying to eat.
There you go. You don't want to do everything possible.
I lost 20 pounds in 2 months. I just cut my subscriptions to Democratic literature, to liberal literature.
Running around yelling and punching things. Yeah, that exercise. Yeah. Hey, Tracy, we got a weight loss program for you, and I'll pay the $700 fee. Send you to Honduras.
Okay.
Pay the $700 to a coyote who then forces you to walk through Mexico to come back to the border.
Hey, listen, I got to tell you guys something. I'm sitting here watching a girl who just got it's on YouTube, who got caught smuggling cocaine in her dreadlocks.
Oh, man.
Are you serious?
Is that what a cokehead is?
That's what a cokehead is, yes.
Oh, that's bad.
Yes.
That's bad.
I haven't had lunch yet, Mark. They'll get better after I eat. My blood sugar goes back up.
You should eat. You should eat. It's time.
I do want to support Pianki. Pianki was defending a position, and Michigan said there was no statistics available about black-run businesses, their success. That is not true. In fact, under the SBA, the federal government is the only entity that's allowed to ask you legally, are you black? And they keep lots of statistics on the money that they give out there, and black folks are a favored group with the grants and stuff and assistance from the SBA. And so there's lots of statistics on those businesses available to the government. They know what's going on.
Let me say this. This is one thing that we need to comprehend. People don't understand that there is a lot of – poverty is a commerce that people make money on through programs of the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't give you they send money out. And you only get the crumbs of the money, but you don't get the meat of the money, and they never show you how to multiply the money that you get because they need to come back and give you more. And if you can make your own, then they lose their job. And so they never want to give you enough to empower you. They give you just enough to make you come back again.
Right.
I was talking to this kid's father was a friend of mine. The young man's name is Antoine Lumpkins. And he's got a business where he has equipment that drills through solid rock, and he drills tunnels, and as he drill them, he coats the inside of that drill cavity with a cement mixture to form a pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And he's here in the St. Louis area, and I'm on top of the ground. He's down 200 feet drilling a tunnel for Metropolitan Sewer District for they can discharge stormwater into the Mississippi River. Mm-hmm. Down in the ground, 200 feet. He hires black workers. There's nowhere in the world I'd do that, but he is doing it and making a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a show called America's Dirtiest Jobs, hosted by a guy named Mike Rowe, who's written a book recently, and he said, you would not believe – he features people who clean out sewers and do all this disgusting stuff.
There's a lot of money in it.
Dead fish and from machinery and everything else. And, yeah, and he says what he never got to mention on the show, most of those people he features that are sitting there with dirty coveralls on are all millionaires.
Let me say this also. What we fail to realize is when we were – during the industrial age, people didn't come home with clean white shirts on often and make money.
Mm-mm.
The majority of America at that time – they got their hands dirty every day. They worked with their backs, and they worked very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you can't get young people, and when I say young people, I'm talking about 18 to 50.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get them to work to where their hands get dirty.
No.
And at one time, if you didn't like your hands getting dirty, you would go get you a job and get an education to make sure that you got out from the dirty work. But you never just walked in from clean work to clean work. That just didn't happen. And we've gotten too complacent with our children and with our young people where we tell them that their hands are supposed to be clean all the time, and that's not real. A man needs to have a callus on his hand every now and then. He needs to know how to swing a hammer. That's work. Yes? Well, that's the truth.
My wife won't let me pick up a hammer.
I wonder why. Because thought backwards, right?
When I was in high school, I worked at Stampaugh Thompson's hardware store.
But you worked.
We worked. We cut glass. We threaded pipe. We did lots of stuff. I was the repo man for a while at Sears.
Why is it that we don't teach, and we're talking about unemployment, we're talking about making money, we're talking about gaining. How can you work if you won't get your hands dirty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Alabama. I didn't even know I was unmuted because I tried to talk a minute ago. I was muted. But I remember when I was little, people used to tell me, people that work with their minds make the most money, and people that work with their hands don't make as much money. So that was I was hearing this in the 90s when I was in high school. So people still believe that deep in their psyche right now. It's more prestigious if someone tells you, ask me what I do, and I say SQL Server Developer,
people actually respect you more, even though I think it's, I'd rather, and I mean this, rather go and work with my hands doing something I love or enjoy doing, or even if it's just, even if it's some, I watched cars for 10 years and I enjoyed myself because I made my own schedule and I had my own business. And I would watch cars on site. And I did that for 10 years. And I was more fulfilled and happier doing that than working in some IT company with a bunch of people that, you know, quite frankly, may or may not like you. But this pays more. But if I can find a way, and that's what I'm looking for now, a way to get out, I'm going to get out. Because I'd rather work for myself.
But let me ask you this. In IT, who makes the most money, the programmer or the installer?
The when you say installer off the top, you're not making no more. You talking about you got a bottom.
I'm not talking about the one running cables. I'm talking about when they go out to run to put in a new server and build that machine. When they build those servers out there on site,
it depends. It really does. It just depends in IT. It fluctuates. Like Cisco people that are running routers and people that are running that right now, you're looking at 70,000-80,000.
Slow down, Alabama, slow down. So for the people that are running routers and installing Cisco machines and doing that kind, they're doing about $70,000-$80,000 a year, right?
Yeah.
So that's somewhere around about $60 an hour, $70 an hour.
No. An hour, that's about 30, 35 to
to 40.
Four.
Yeah.
Okay, that's $40 an hour. So then you get your programmer.
Yeah.
You get your programmer out there. He's making somewhere what? About
$70
an hour?
If you just a C+ or .NET developer, you can make $50,000, but you could be a Ruby on Rails guy making $100, $250. You can make a lot of money, or you could do what I do as a SQL database developer, which and you somewhat programming through the language called T-SQL, and you can do $50 an hour. So that's the average. That's usually what I
see.
Okay.
So that's the average. And there's very seldom there's a time that you stay unemployed for more than a couple of days. Because even as contractors, you go from one job to the next because they're always looking for somebody to come and write programs.
I get a job. My last jobs I've gotten in days. I mean, it doesn't take time to get a job. Once I lose one or something fall through, like I just got this contract, it fell through, I got an interview already tomorrow. So, I mean, and they looking like they want me to come to work. That's what the guy, he said, they may want you to start Monday. I said, okay. It's
Tracy,
just that quick. I never
Alabama.
Have to struggle for a job.
Tracy, may I brag about Alabama? Because the man is just too humble to tell it the way it is. It's actually embarrassing. The day a couple months ago, I guess it was back in early spring, maybe February, when everybody on this line was all hot and heavy and yelling and screaming over the friggin' minimum wage, Alabama got the word that he just lost his job that day. And I wrapped my arms around him over the phone and said, brother, don't worry about it. Is there anything I can do? He said, don't worry about me. I'll have another job in a couple of days. 5 days later, he called me, had a job that paid him $10,000 a year more than the job he just lost. 6 years ago, Alabama was working in a produce department. What he knows, he taught himself for free on the Internet.
But again, you
got
have to know
it
where
wasn't
to go.
A federal program.
Again, you've got to know where to go. And what's happening is we're not teaching our young people. When we talk about unemployment, when we talk about what's going on in our world,
mm-hmm.
You know, I talk to young people, and they like playing games, but they don't want to know how to create the game
right.
So that they can make money at it. That's
right.
Crazy to me.
Yeah. They're reducing themselves to where 100 years ago.
Can I say something interesting about that?
What's that?
One thing about gaming, apps right now is the thing, Android. If you can create gaming software, they got gaming. They got stuff you can download, like software now. You don't even have to be that good of a programmer. Just like with a website, at first you had to know HTML. Now it's all graphically done. Just like with video games, you can sit there. They got software now so advanced, and you can download it off some peer website for free and start making your own video games, uploading it to the Android, Google Play Store, or iTunes, and sell it. And the more downloads you get, the more people call you to develop apps for them. There's a guy here in Atlanta that's 19 years old that graduated. He gets $120 an hour. He just developed Android apps. He didn't even go to college.
Yeah.
So tell me, where does that information get trickled down to the inner city kid at 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old so that he can aspire not to be in poverty like he is, but to come
out? I can
out.
Answer that question.
Yeah, Pianchi?
The information don't trickle down. You as a parent, as a community, as stakeholders, have a responsibility to form the type of infrastructure where your children are taught these things. We're talking about valuable information, which equates to empowering oneself, either becoming rich or wealthy, and people just don't give that away, but it's free. You got to put an effort. If you depend on public schools, you know, somebody said they was involved in Head Start. I would get rid of Head Start because it does not even have a record of showing where it's successful. If Head Start is so successful, then how is it that so many children at the age at the
third
level can't read?
Yeah, we have more illiterate children today after 40 years of Head Start than we had before Head Start.
But like, you missed my conversation a little bit earlier, Mike. I said we were talking. Covina Man asked about platform and what the Republicans should run on, and I said I don't think we should eliminate. You don't have to eliminate Head Start, but Head Start needs to be revamped in its entirety so that it has a mastery component to it. So you don't go anywhere until you master the skills that are needed at each level.
And it should also have a parental training component to it, because the biggest problem these poor little kids have, their parents are idiots.
No, that's not true, Mike. That's not true. You can't say that their parents are idiots. You have to understand the parents are taught that from that same Head Start program that you said that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not idiots.
Okay.
They've been trained to become or to think like the system wants them to think and not to think independently.
Whoa.
Go ahead, South Carolina.
Listen, since I've been in it so long, the problem with Head Start didn't start in 1969. The problem with Head Start started in 1972 after the program was implemented and had been implemented for some time. Those that saw the early on successes of Head Start said, okay, this thing is moving too fast. It's going to get too big. It's going to get too successful. We need to rein it in. And the way they reined it in was they took the ABCs off the walls. They told the teachers, listen, we don't want to have you don't have to be have a degree to be a teacher in the Head Start system. And then they threw in a whole bunch of money, improving buildings and all the rest of the stuff, and paying people. And the same people that were there in 72 are the same people that are there now. They are thoroughly entrenched in that system, and they will not move. This is why the Head Start programs are getting eaten up, eaten alive, and they've been left behind since 78. And there's nothing that nobody can do about it, because until you get those folks out of there that have that mindset, you're not going to change it.
Well, could I interject?
Hold on. Go ahead, Alabama. Just make sure you don't talk on top of everyone else. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. Yesterday I was trying to find some information. There's this new technology they got out called scalp pigmentation for hair loss, right? I got on the phone. I started on the first page of Google. It took me to like 10 pages in. I typed scalp pigmentation training. No one wanted to train. The only people that would train you were in Australia or way over in the UK, and the people that I called in America did not want to share the information. They didn't say it like that. They were like, I don't know where you can get trained. But I'm still like, okay, you obviously got trained because you're doing it, and I know you didn't just grab the tools and just started doing it. So I had to find this lady in Texas. And the reason I'm saying this is all I'm saying is this. And she didn't even have a website. Somebody gave me her phone number. But the point I'm trying to make is that when you want something, you find stuff. It's like it doesn't take being the most intelligent or education. My high school transcript's full of D's. I pass with a D average. But the point I'm trying to make is that when you want something and you got the desire for it, you'll find it. You'll find a way. That's just the way it works. If I find an opportunity where I see where I can go and make a lot of money doing something, then you just go for a quest, on a quest to find that knowledge, and that's how you do it. You don't go out here begging some teacher to put that information in your head, because people that think like that get left behind in the long run. You got to find it on yourself.
No, you don't. Let me say this. You can't become that which you don't see. And I will never forget the day that I was going down. I had moved to Los Angeles. I was sleeping in my car. And I saw a black man and his wife go down La Cienega and 3rd in what they call the Wilshire District in a brown Rolls Royce. And he wasn't a dope dealer, and he wasn't a basketball player. He was just a businessman. And I was in my car, and I looked over at him, and I said, wow, if he can do it, so can I. You've got to see success. If you don't see success in action, and all you see success is being an NBA, an NFL, a sports figure, or a dope dealer, or a singer, or a rapper, and if that's all your whole circumference is, you will never aspire to become anything else.
But how did I get exposed to that, though, Tracy? How did I get exposed?
I can't. Let me say this. Everybody's got their own circumference of perspective, and everybody's got their own story. And it's okay that you didn't have to see it. But I had to see success to want to achieve success. And once I saw it, I said, wow, that's good. And now the more I read and the more I align with people who are moving somewhere, the more I want to become something, but I want to become something so I can go back and give back. Because you've got to reach back and give back if you're going to move forward. Our problem that we have is those of us who are making it aren't reaching backwards. And that's the truth. You know, we need to go back and teach young people about IT. We need to teach them about other jobs that are in the medical profession. I talked to a young lady the other day, and she wants to go into to law enforcement, but her only point of reference is a television show. That's not reality. So we need to talk to her and begin to groom her, not just for the police force, but to know that there are other jobs outside of the police force that she can use criminal justice in.
Well,
and have her talk
to
professionals. I mean, and what I'm saying is, with your IT, I appreciate what you do, but I got some young kids that they need to know that they can take their art that they like to draw, teach them graphic art because you don't draw on pencil and paper anymore, and then show them how to turn that into the video games that they play for recreation. And if you don't go and tell them about an app that's free on the Internet, and we don't talk to their parents about having Internet in their home, and how important it's more important to have Internet than it is to have cable, and how you can cut the cord of the cable into DirecTV and satellite television, and you can have Internet, and you can watch it on your TVs and for $9.95 instead of $139 a month. If you don't teach it, it won't happen. But that's education,
and you know,
that's information.
And, you know, you mentioned about sports, but it's nothing wrong. See, we look at sports from one particular view, and that's on the court or on the field. But all the other things that's associated with making a national football game or a national basketball game happen is, you know, there's a lot of professions involved in that. You know, my grandson plays with Kurt Ford, who used to play for the St. Louis Cardinals during the time of Ozzie Smith. And he also works for the St. Louis Cardinals and carrying out clinics, a camp. And before the game last night, as he was talking to the player, he pulled out a check, gave it to me, and told me to read it. And for a day's work, well, actually a few hours. And it's from the St. Louis Cardinals baseball team. The numbers on it was $500 for about 4 hours worth of work, training, and hosting a camp for the Cardinals. And I think it's probably with their players. So that there is legitimate money. It's being able to take the talents that you learn from one thing and apply them into another that's needed and go for it. And that's what our children need to be exposed. From landscaping to communication to audiovisual to marketing to sports medicine and training, all those subcategories are major league sport that we watch on the television set, and we only concentrate it from one aspect of that sport rather than looking at the whole picture.
But I got a question for you, Pianchi. When I worked for the Lakers, I found that there were more jobs that were off the court than there were on the court. So tell me, why is it that we don't have tours and what they call field trips for our young people so they can know that there are statisticians, there's a color man, there's a commentator, there is a doctor, there's a physical trainer, there are marketing people. All these people are contracted and or work for the franchise who are part of the organization.
Absolutely right.
So that when you go through college and you play pro ball, you don't have to just be the commentator on TV, but there's a whole lot of things working where you are part of a team, and the team can't function. The person that actually engineers the floors in which we play on makes a whole lot more than the guy who's playing on the floor.
And, you know, another thing, I mean, one of our players on my grandson's high school team got a scholarship to Alabama A&M, and guess what he's majoring in? Sports medicine. So that information is available. The facilities and the infrastructure in order where children can become adapt in these particular type of professions, avocations we talked about, it takes people who are dedicated and want to put their children in those directions. They have to step forward and do just that.
And I'm
just
saying,
he's going to have fun at Alabama A&M.
I got to take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends.
Man, I agree, but then I also disagree. I feel like all you got to do is say, I want to make money. Who makes money? Open your eyes and look around. Go on the Internet, look, and you'll find ways, man. I mean, it's not always my brother or uncle or cousins don't necessarily, may not always do what I want to do to make money, but you just got to have that drive and motivation to say, look, let me see, find out about where I can make $4,000 in 6 hours. Oh, this guy made $4,000 in 6 hours doing X, Y, and Z. Well, that's what I need to do. That's all it is. I think we overthink it sometimes. I think we make it more difficult than it should be. It don't take all that. Ain't got to have nobody tell me what to do or what. I mean, and when you have kids that think like that, I'm sorry. I do have to blame the parents that think that the only way I'm going to get something is if somebody come give it to me. That's a parent's mentality that's been given to that child.
Yeah, that kid with that drilling company just responded with me telling me the name of his construction company. It's allconstructionllc.com.
So where did he learn that? Somebody, he just probably found the equipment, thought he could make money, saw an opportunity.
Actually, he worked for, and believe it or not, he worked for a racist organization. But I don't want to say that they were, but, you know, it's quite obvious. He worked for In Situ Farms. And I don't know how to spell it. In Situ Farm, actually, they came out of Mississippi. And matter of fact, you know, he tell me a story that many of the members were members of the Klan. But they up here in this area, they was doing drilling. And it was also doing running fiber optic cable for your red light cameras and your intersection cameras that you see at the intersections in your cities and so forth. And he used to work
for
them.
When you get into running fiber
optics,
he learned
the trade. Now he's doing it himself.
When you get into running fiber optics, you talk about a lot of money, man. You talking millions. In fact, Google's about to change the game, man. Google is charging people in California $300. To get their houses wired up, and they get lifetime access to different stuff, man. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Hold on 1 second.
He must... Hello.
Bianchi, how you doing, my brother?
I'm doing all right today, so far.
I probably shouldn't have taken that liberty, but I, you know, if we were neighbors, I would seek out your company and wisdom. So.
Well, I have things to offer in a conversation from time to time.
Yeah, because you've been out there. You know, there's... You know, that's like yesterday our president gave that wonderful supposition speech, which pissed me off. the probably speech.
Mike.
If we put up a fence, they'd probably say they'd want a second fence. If we put up a second fence, they'd probably
not
say
so
want
blind, Mike. I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
Every business that you've done,
yes,
had you been exposed to it, or did you just see the opportunity and went for it?
A combination of a little bit of everything. I either heard about somebody doing it, and I said, I wonder if there's a way a blind guy could do that, or it was something I said, you know what, I see a problem here, and if I get in between the problem and the solution, I could make a buck being the middleman. And I've done it both ways. Do you have something specific in mind? Or?
Well, I mean, no, I'm just saying, like, I see opportunity. Like, I failed at certain things, but the opportunity was there. It's,
yeah.
I failed for other reasons, not because it was a bad idea. I probably just didn't have the funding or it was, you know, timing or whatever. But I have done things.
Oh, I've had a ton of failures. Matter of fact, when I had the warehouse, when I had the construction company, I had more room back there, and we had a whole section on the second floor in the loft area of the warehouse that was set aside that we referred to as the Museum of the Defunct. It was all the different businesses I had tried and everything over it. Well, at that point, I was self-employed only 15, 16 years, and I probably had 20 things I tried that failed.
I never failed no businesses, so I came out of what I was doing. I think that a person, the best business to get into is that what you are doing for somebody else. Mm-hmm. That way you can become a competitor, you understand
yep.
it, and if you weren't proficient at it, they never would keep you on the payroll anyway.
Well, that's where I was going, Pianchi, because that the most successful businesses I had is where I said, I like that, I hear that industry, and I went to work for somebody else and learned it from the inside. Matter of fact, the interns I had here this summer, every one of them came up with a business, and they wanted to do this, and they wanted to do that, and they wanted to go get money from grandma, and I says, no, you're going to go back home, and you're going to go find somebody who's already doing what you want to do, and you're going to volunteer to work for them. I don't care if they pay you less than minimum wage, and in a year, it'll save you $1 million worth of mistakes, because from the inside, you'll see that business. You know? And yeah, I agree with you. The most successful businesses were the ones where I was trained by somebody else, or I got to observe firsthand what somebody else was doing on a daily basis to make that business run.
But let me ask you guys, do you feel like a lot of successful businesses are businesses that are started from the kitchen table, and you may have a job, but you don't live off of it, and that way cash flows a lot better
yep.
than if you're trying to put, you quit your job, you're making 85, now you got to make 85 base before you even put one penny back into the business.
Yeah. Well, there's people who have talked about that, like the guy that it wasn't Kinko's. It was a company like Kinko's, the name you would know. And what he did was he worked the job, and used that Christian principle where you need at least 6 months' salary in the bank. You know, a lot of Christians teach that. Dave Ramsey teaches that from a Christian perspective. He had 6 months' salary in a bank, and he was zero debt-free. Everything was paid. And then he went and started his business, not knowing that he had 6 months to start generating his cash flow.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. We got about 15 more minutes to go before we're at the end of the day, and we'll be back here on tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be open mic with Jeff and I. And we're glad to have everyone that has been with us today. It's been a great conversation about a lot, starting with politics and going over to coming down to, you know, still throwing the politics edge in there, but making sure that we understand that it is a responsibility of every individual to be their own political advocate, get an education, as well as get a job. Because at the end of the day, you should be responsible for your own life and your own quality of life and your own well-being. And if you keep on giving it over to the political system, you will always be a part of the slavery movement. And that's just how I feel, and I believe it's the truth, and I'm sorry if you don't agree with me, but we'll be all get over it. But, Mark, agree to disagree. Hold on, Mike. What'd you say?
I got a little bit of a problem here.
What's the problem? You got your tablet in front of you.
Yeah, my maps flipped.
What maps?
Well, we were looking up the address during the break.
Yeah.
And my north is south and my south is north on my map.
You use Google Maps because they're always right. That's the new beast of America. 831, your mic is on. How are you this morning?
I'm good.
thank you for asking, and everyone there as well, I can tell. I like to talk. I like to listen to your show when you're talking about business. That really is inspiring. So thank you for having that.
I don't know anything else. See, they want to talk about I can't talk about a lot of stuff because I don't know a lot about a lot of stuff. But I do know that if you want to be free, you've got to have your own control of your own commerce. I do know that.
You're right.
If you don't control your own commerce, whatever it may be, you will never be free.
You know, I heard, Tracy, that in 2014, every American should quit their job, who they're working for, and become an entrepreneur.
I disagree with that. I think everyone should become an entrepreneur while they're working for someone else.
Correct.
You still got to eat today.
Correct.
I wouldn't want to be the first.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right.
See,
you're right.
I've got a different, I have a different philosophy
saying
about entrepreneurship. Quit your job. Yes, Stanley?
Tracy, why are you saying that not everybody could be an entrepreneur?
That's not what I said. I said don't quit your job. I said don't quit your job and become an entrepreneur. Become an entrepreneur while you're working for someone else. Which is called two jobs.
Right.
And you're going to work hard until the one pays for the other, and then you have to quit the job that you're working for someone else. But don't go, because some people get that wrong. They go out and quit their job and try to start a new job. No, you just have two jobs.
Yeah, but you have you better make sure in your mind that you don't forget that you are working for somebody else. So other person doesn't owe you nothing. And if that person decides to cut you better make sure that you have a plan B, C, D, or F to make your living.
Stanley, listen. Let me say it this way. I got to go back to what I believe, what I know. You don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. So what you don't do is you don't go into your current employer and say, guess what, I started my own business yesterday, and it's going to compete with you.
Not.
You don't do that. You just go to work and do your job and do the best you can at your job, knowing at
you
the
know
end
what
of
I've
the day
done?
You're going to your job too. What'd you say, Pianchi?
I tried to buy mine out.
Yeah, I've done that too.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Wouldn't hire me. I went and started a company of my own doing the same thing, and a year and a half later, after I had taken all their best help when they were on the rocks, I bought them out.
I tried to buy mine out. I came in his office and laid a business plan on his desk, and he sat on it for about 3 or 4 months.
They wouldn't hire me for a $10 an hour job, and a year and a half later, I had a business doing what they did, and I was doing over $2 million a year.
Now, that's business warfare right there. I love to hear stuff like that. That's warfare. That's what it is. Business is war to me.
One
at a time, guys.
A close friend of mine did the same thing. He got fired from that job and everything. Next thing you know, he came back to the boss and everything and owned up a business and everything, making a lot of money, and came up to his family and said, you thought I was just worth $50,000. Now look at how much I'm worth now.
But again, you've got to be smart. You've got to be smart. You don't, as I said, if you don't have the means to go and buy it that day, then shut up until you can. But that doesn't stop you from starting your own business and doing what you want to do. Because you might not even like the job that you're doing. You may not have to go buy what you're doing because you don't like what you're doing. But if you like selling, if you like making quilts, sit at home and make your quilts and find a way to get it out until your quilt business takes over your business, and actually it'll force you out of working for someone else, and you'll be working for yourself.
That's where most people who have a skill like that fail. They don't know how to market their product. That's where they fall
down.
But
we're going to work on that. We're going to work on that here in our community. I can't speak about the communities across this globe, but we're going to work on making sure that people have an education and have a resource center where they can learn how to promote themselves, how to make better choices, and how to go into business for themselves. But again, I'm tired of people coming up with a program and only giving you the crumbs and never giving you the meat. Because if I don't give you the meat of it, you'll never get sustainability.
It didn't cost much to start it neither.
But
cost
I never
about $15,000.
Say that again.
I had two
me?
Accounts: one checking account, one business savings account. Had $7,500 in both of them, and that $7,500 multiplied to millions.
What did you say? What did you say, Bill? What did you say, Alabama?
No, what I was saying was I don't feel when, like yesterday, when I was doing that search, nobody wanted to give me the information. I was in my mind, around my mind, you guys, excuse me, I'm on the treadmill. I was wrapping around in my mind that I was going to have to fly out of London, stay there for 4 days, and get, and I was going to do it. But I don't fear not people withholding information from me. I'm gonna get the information. It's the information age.
Listen to what I'm saying. You got to have a sense to be able to do that. But when I say this, when you go into business, it's like with starting a church. There are things that you need to know, not based on, it's not public information. You wouldn't even know to Google it because you don't know it until it happens to you. And so instead of me going out and sharing the information with Mark and saying, Mark, when you go into business, don't do this. Make sure you have a separate account here. Make sure you do this with the sales tax here so that you don't get in tax trouble here. Make sure that you do this here. This is the stuff that people don't go out and tell you. And if you do tell you, your accountant is going to charge you a whole lot of money to give you a little bit of information that somebody could have given you for free. And what I'm saying is we need to start sharing information and getting this information so when people go into business, they don't have to make the same mistakes over and over again that are common practice in every business that started on day one. And that's stuff that people do not give people. And we need to find a way to make sure that that information is accessible to people who want to go into business so that they can have sustainability and they can go and hire people so that we can have entrepreneurship. We can have entrepreneurship as well as industry within our own communities. See, this, hold on, Stanley. We've got people that come in here and talk about a credit union, and they talk about this credit union over and over again, and they want to raise money and they want to do this, but no one has told them how to go about and how they got their start done. So they're starting from scratch all over and over again. That's what happens to businesses who die because of inheritance tax. Because the children can't take it over and make it grow. Uh-huh. Go ahead, Stanley.
Like I said, the biggest problem I have, yes, I think a lot of entrepreneurs would love to give those stuff away, but like I keep on saying, you really need to have people who really wants it. Because there's nothing more frustrating to giving things away that you know will work, and the other person doesn't even do the job, and you call them up, and you even are near them. I'm telling them, just do this, and then I'll help you, whatever case. And 2 months later or 3 months later, still complaining, saying, I don't got the money, I don't do this, I don't do that.
Right.
So, you know, let me say it this way. If you pay for a class, and the class, I mean, I think everything ought to have a fee to it. It doesn't have to be an excessive fee, but it might be $10. It might be on a sliding scale, but you need to have some skin in the game. But I tell people stuff all the time, and after a while, I realize that they're not listening to me anyhow. And so I just let them go ahead and do what they're going to do. But there are those people out there who want to know. And if I tell them, they may not follow it verbatim from what I'm saying, but what they will do is they'll go research it and see if it will apply. Because it's not about doing all that I say to do. It's about making sure that you listen to what's going on, research it, and seeing if it will adhere to what you're doing. Because I've come to the resolve that not everybody wants to be successful. Not everybody wants to be independent, and not everybody wants to grow. And I can only help people that want to help themselves. If you don't want to help yourself, I can't help you.
I agree with you.
And we need to understand there are certain people who like to be impoverished. And if that's what you want to do for the rest of your life, you need to do that. But what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to pay for your impoverishment. I am not going to pay for it. I'm not going to help you with it. That's where entitlement comes from. People think I ought to be able to stay at home all day long, don't do nothing, don't get a job, send me a check, and everything is cool. And if that's how you want to live, I'm not sending you my money every month. That's crazy. I'm not paying you to come to work. But if you come to work, I will pay you for the job you do. That's why I don't agree in increasing the minimum wage. Not because I don't want to pay you, but I'm not going to pay you to show up.
I'm only going to pay you to get better.
That's
Tracy,
it.
Here's what I don't understand, the dichotomy here, okay? The same people that are telling you that President Obama is doing a good job are the same people telling you how hard things are. Now, which is it?
It's both.
He's done a damn good job for this economy, whether we understand it or not, because according to the 2012 statistics just released, 8.99 million American households report a worth of $1 million. That's one out of every 10 Americans is living in a home, because it's a household, 3.8 people, that's the average household. That's almost 36 million Americans live in a household. That's almost 10%. It was never that high. In 1960, it was like 1 out of 300. So something good is going on here, but then you got the people who get paid to make money on poverty and hunger and victimism.
That's what I said earlier. People don't understand poverty.
Whether we know it or
poverty
not.
Is a commodity. And until we understand the commodity of poverty, there's a lot of people who make millions and millions of dollars on people who are impoverished. It is a commodity. You have value. Poverty has value to someone. That's why they want to keep you where you are. That's why we have immigrants coming up here so they can actually make more people impoverished, because the more people that die off, you know, incarceration is a commodity. People make money on your crime.
In the private sector, about one person out of 20 earns over 100 grand a year. Working for the government, it's 19 out of 100. Almost 1 out of 5 makes
hey,
over
I'm done for the day,
grand
guys.
A year working for the government.
We'll see you guys on tomorrow. God bless you. Have a good day. You've been listening to Tracy and Friends here on the...
So you can't argue both ways. Either the president is doing a good job or he's not, but you can't tell me it's both true. Because the statistics show that more people are getting ahead. So all this negative press we're picking up on is to create a victim class to justify
mentality. Exactly.
Yeah. Not upsetting
I
the
agree with
person.
You
200% people are getting rich on poverty.
Yeah. We have to teach people that there is plenty of money. It depends on what you want to do. If you work for somebody, you will never become wealthy. Ever. Ever.
That's not quite necessarily true, Stanley. You got those folks out there that work for places like Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook.
But they own up part of the company. They own up the part of the company.
Yeah, they
that's
get shares. They get shares.
They have shares.
Yeah.
if you don't own up something
work
when
somebody.
You're working for somebody,
they get
you're
stock
done.
Options. They get stock options.
Yeah, they got stock options. If I work for Mark Zuckerberg, but I work from the beginning when the Facebook started, you're rich.
Have you guys ever seen something venture about all the venture capitalists that funded Silicon Valley?
What about them?
I just watched that this morning about I was telling the guy about the men who built America. We were going back and forth on Facebook. He was just telling me about something venture. He was just breaking down how these guys started all these companies, what they did.
Yep.
I mean, to a certain extent, I think it's also timing where you are and if the resources are there.
Yeah.
And that's just the bottom line. And a lot of you hear a lot of black people say that. We just don't have the resources. I can't argue with that. But so you know,
well,
but
you
really,
got
this
to
is
think
what
necessary to get the resources.
Right. That's what I was about to say. You took the words out of my mouth. I was about to say you start small. People don't like starting small. People don't value a business that generates $2,000 a month. They sitting like that's a waste of my time. I'm like, well, if you work in a 9-to-5 and you make $2,000 a month in a year, and you do your tax returns, you got your credit together. You're not going to be doing that, you know, working at 9-to-5 in another year or so, if you just modestly manage your money. But therein is the dilemma that, you know, people don't value that small dollar. You got to start with the small dollar and value making $20 at a time. I think people don't want to do that. They want to jump to the big boys. You can't do that. You if you're small, like the Jews, if you read up how they started 100 years ago, they started as street peddlers.
Yep.
Selling nickel and diamond. Every dollar they made, they struck. Yeah, just little bitty stuff.
Yeah.
Start there. But people don't want to do that. They want to, I want to walk in the bank and get $1 million loan. Well, we all do.
Yeah. I knew a guy who came to our hometown. He was a Greek immigrant, spoke very poor English. For 2 summers, we saw him going around the project with an ice cream truck. Third summer, we didn't see him. He opened up a little by-the-slice pizzeria. 20 years later, that man had his whole family over here working for him. They had a chain of pizzerias. He had a bunch of fine dining restaurants, and he was sitting on the board of directors of one of the largest banks in Connecticut 20 years later. It was the same country. You can't tell me somebody who doesn't have a driver's license can't drive an ice cream truck through a project, an inner-city project, that's above a grade level of pay or intelligence. The guy, you know, he couldn't even make change. He had to trust the kids because we understood American money.
Yeah. That's it. That's it, man. That's the key, man. It's about starting small. We don't want to start small. Right now, I don't care if you make $100,000 a year. And that's the problem with a lot of people in middle class that stops them. They'll get a job making $70,000, $80,000, and they may start a business that rakes in an extra $12,000 a year and be like, they don't look at that as money because they make more than that on their paycheck.
Yeah.
But they don't understand. You can't save that amount of money per month, though. You can't pull in $1,000 and put it in the bank. If you run this business, you can. If you just budget and don't touch the money, it'll compound. Next year, you'll have more money. You know, just 18 months in, you got the $20,000 down to go, you know, do whatever you have to do.
But you know another thing, too, it depends on your age, because a person 50 years old is making $100,000 a year is not willing to put in the time and effort and the pain to run a business. I would stay with the $100,000 year job myself.
Right.
Well, I agree, but a lot of companies come from people that failed and didn't start till they was over 40 years old. I mean, you look at everybody's success story. Most people made money. If they make money when they're young, they either don't come back, or if they do, they're a lot smarter and wiser, and they come back. And, you know, my brother told me when I was young, he was like, look, if you want to get advice from people, find somebody that made a lot of money and lost it and came back. That's the guy you want to talk to. The guy that made a lot of money and lost it might have just benefited from his circumstance. But the guy that came back, he got something in his head.
My best business teacher was a lady that failed 7 businesses. So you're right about that. But in essence, most businesses fail. And I think, I can't say why they fail, but as I said before, if you already work for somebody and you've been working for them for 15 or 20 years, then what you're doing, you're more apt to be successful if you do that for yourself than if you was to go out and try something that you ain't never heard of before in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the only thing I see that's a little different is real estate, but that's the only thing I see that may be a little different. But for the most part, if you're going to start a regular business, per se, then yeah.
But I made my grandson take up business minor. Business as a minor. With his major, so. But I may not be around.
Honestly, I'm going to be completely honest with you. Business and university, I'm a business major. I took a lot of those courses. I learned more about business running my own little small lollygag car wash with, you know, $2,000 worth of equipment than I learned in all the business classes I took. I learned the terms. I know the terms. I know the certain words and
how to say it as a minor.
Yeah, I know how to run a ledger and stuff like that, but as far as, like, I know that part of it, but as far as the ins and outs, the nuts and bolts of having to walk into a place as an African-American in some gym shorts and a T-shirt because it's 90 degrees, walk into a business with a bunch of middle-aged white women and be able to speak articulately and ask them for their business and have them give you your keys without having ever met you before. That takes, you have to work, you have to know how to talk. They would give me their keys. I walk out there in a $50,000 car and unlock it and vacuum it and do whatever right there on the spot. And that taught me a lot about business, how to talk to people, how to interact. You got to know how to do that more than anything.
Yeah. I once had a guy hand me the keys to his brand new Mercedes to me to go get it washed, and I don't even drive. But it's all trust. He just assumed whoever I asked to drive would be responsible like I was. Yeah, and that was really funny, too, because Alabama, I've told you the story, but Pianki, what happened was 2 days before I had lined up a dog and pony show tour because I was trying to sell a $250,000 replacement window job when I'd never done anything that big. And I had the manager of the apartment complex scheduled to go on a tour where I could show him some of my work around the state. And 2 nights before, my old Buick wagon, the whole side got caved in, a hit and run. I only had one door on the car that would work. And so I went down to see this guy whose restaurant I used to do work for. He owed me, and I needed the $20 because I needed gas money and I needed to take this guy out, you know, for lunch and stuff and wine him and dine. He's a potential client. And I stood there, and I and the guy looked at me, and the owner of the restaurant said, what the hell are you doing here? And I said, I got this invoice here. It was like $124 now that I remember. And he goes, holy smokes, can't you give me 30 days on this? And na-na-na-na-na-na. And I said, well, I just saw you pay the fish man cash. He said, yeah, but he's got a boat, and he's got all this overhead. And I said, and God don't give him 30 days on the fish. And the guy calmed down. He said, you're right. He said, you do good work. You're always here when I need you. Let me go get you a check. He came back, and he apologized. He said, look, he said, it's just a crazy day and everything here. He said, I got to get out here at 4 o'clock. I don't even have time to go get my car washed. He had a brand-new Mercedes. And he was very politically active. He had to go meet the governor or something. And I said, well, I'll wash your car for you. And he said, you will? And I said, yeah. And I said, but I said, I've got a few things I got to do. I'll have it. And he said, as long as you get it back here by 4 o'clock. I said, I'll have it back here by 3. He said, good enough. He even gave me $100 to go get his car washed for him. So I go pick up this guy who's the head of this apartment complex, and I'm driving him around a brand-new, this is 1985 or 86, and I'm driving around a brand-new $80,000 Mercedes fully loaded. Man, I took that guy on that tour, and when to wrap the thing up, I knew the guy liked his wine, and usually most days I couldn't meet with the manager of the complex because he was usually four sheets to the wind by noon. So I took him back to that restaurant, dropped off the car, sat in a booth for 2 hours, and made sure he got really, really loaded, okay? And the owner of the restaurant saw me sitting there with my business client, comped the entire meal and all the drinks on top because he was so grateful I washed his car, okay? And the guy was so drunk, the client, that he didn't know that we literally picked him up and shoved him in the back window of the station wagon because we couldn't get a door to open. Took him home, dropped him, poured him off on his front porch. 3 days later, they signed a $250,000 contract with me.
You sure got a good time in business. It's whatever.
I had fun.
I was in the Dominican Republic with a guy named Edmund Hermita.
Uh-huh.
We took him. He's like a billionaire. Lives with Sammy Sosa. Lives right next to him. Yeah. We met him. We buying him drinks. Now, this guy could probably buy us 20 times over.
Yep.
We bought him drinks, took him out, showed him a good time. He said, anytime you come to the Dominican Republic, and people would respect us from that point because they saw us out with him. I didn't know who he was. We just said, we just was in one of his businesses, and they said, that's the owner.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought him a drink in his own business, started talking to him, and this guy, anytime I go to the Dominican Republic, he's like, just give me a call. And he hooks us up. He told us that we want to do businesses over there. He was, you know, he'd be open to it because I told him about rehabbing. They really don't do that too much over there.
Yeah.
He started rehabbing and making a lot of money doing it, and called me up all gleeful about it.
Yeah.
And
yesterday,
you know,
I had probably one of the most interesting days in my business career. My reputation is out there, and a billionaire heard about me and how I like to help people and stuff. Yesterday, two of his top people, one from his foundation and one from his chief legal from his main source of income company, and if I were to tell you the name, you would know who this guy is, flew those two people to South Carolina just to meet with him for 2.5 hours yesterday and to see if there wasn't some way we could all work together. You get out there, and, you know, the old saying, God cannot steer a parked car. And Bianchi, as the engineer that he is, will tell you, it's rolling friction. That's why you can steer. If the car ain't rolling, you could turn the wheel left and right. It ain't going anywhere. It's got no direction, you know?
Yeah.
And you get out there, and you get things going, and you just don't know where it leads you, Alabama, just like you. I mean, I provoke myself. Alabama, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to out your private life. But
oh,
I'm so
okay.
Proud of you, brother.
It didn't bother me. It didn't bother me.
I'm so proud of you, little brother, because you are just like the epitome of don't stand still. And when you started with washing cars for 10 years, six years ago you're working fast food, then you go to produce. Meanwhile, you're studying this, and now you're a highly paid IT guy in the top 5% in incomes in the United States. You're approaching that, and you totally pick yourself up by your bootstraps. And it's just like I am just so darn proud and feeling privileged just to know people like you and Bianchi and have met you guys because you're can-do, get-it-done people. Those are the kind of people you got to surround yourself with in this life. You can't surround yourself with the losers and moaners and complainers.
Yeah, I honestly, for the life of me,
Yeah.
I don't feel, and I know this sounds, I read a book. This book probably is one of the most influential books I ever read.
Yeah.
By a guy named, the guy that founded Beatrice.
Yeah.
The CEO, he purchased Beatrice Food Company. His name was Reginald Lewis. He died of, I think, leukemia.
Yeah.
In his 40s. But this guy, I read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was impressed because the guy was a C student out of North Carolina, out of some black college he went to. And then he's a C student,
mm-hmm.
and talked his way into Harvard Business School. Got in, got out, he was a lawyer. I think he was Harvard Business or Harvard Law. Harvard Law. Got out, he was a lawyer, and was making $140, $150, and he would say, man, I'm broke. I mean, that's how he looked at it. He was like, I'm not where I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like the early 80s, you know.
Yeah.
He's talking about he's broke, he had no money.
Yeah.
He feels like he should be making more money. So I just sat and that really had an impact on my life. My brother gave me the book. It's called Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun?
Yeah.
And he just,
I love
this
that.
Guy was he was a beast. I mean, this guy just didn't care about, mm-hmm. you know, he just didn't take no for an answer. So I was
Alabama.
Like, I want to be like this guy.
Alabama, unfortunately, I got to run. They're telling me my lunch guests are here and food's on the table, so I got to get into the meeting. Good talking to you as always, Pianchi. As always, a pleasure, sir. And God bless you.
Oh, busy, not so bad.
Huh?
All right, Jeff, screaming. Ain't nobody know you was on here.
Say he's always busy. You better send me some money.
Well, just give me, email me your address. You know how to get a hold of me. Call me and tell me what your need is. You know, that's one of the reasons why I'm excited to work with this billionaire coming up here, because I've studied his history. I know all about his businesses, but I also see he's been very philanthropic long before he was a billionaire, and I believe the same principle. You give from what you have, not when you have.
Well, you good luck to you, man.
Thank you. And, Jeff, I'll take care of you. You need, we got a guest room here. You fall on hard times and need a place to go, my door's open.
I'm not hard times, but I'll tell you something when we get together.
Okay, cool.
All right, bro.
Take care.
What's up with you, Alabama?
Nothing much, man. You read that book before?
Ever hear what?
Have you read Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun? Have you read it?
No, I sure haven't.
You need to check it out, man. It's a good book, though.
That's
all I do. I don't really listen to music. I'm in the car now. I just left the gym. I'm in the car. All I got going is the air conditioner. That's all I ever hear. My radio is never on. If I'm not listening to on YouTube or listening to an audio book, I don't see no purpose in it. I don't see no purpose in getting in the car listening to this mindless music what they call music, these mindless beats that they put out. No lyrical content, no words over four letters. It's just, it's not really, what I'm saying? It just doesn't challenge, it doesn't stimulate. And I ain't going to sit in here and lie and say when I go out to a club or something, sometimes I may not want to hear music, but not all the time. And everything they're talking about, drugs, and I'm selling drugs, I'm having sex. And these are the same guys been rapping for 7-8 years, and they still talking about selling drugs. I'm like, you don't sell drugs, man. You've been rapping for 10 years. Just stop.
Right, right. Hey, man, but hey, anyway. When I come down there, man, I'm going to be at the Airport Hilton.
Give me a holler. When you coming?
August. I'll probably be there about August 14th.
Well, give me a holler because you catch the MARTA. You can catch the MARTA, ride straight down the transit line and come down, take the red line all the way to the end. And you'll be right here by me. I'll pick you up. It's number $2 for the MARTA.
All right, man. We'll talk because I'd like to meet you, my brother.
All right, bro. But come to you when we go to Spundis for some good seafood.
Well,
so that'll be right out by where you are.
I'll be right out there by the airport. I don't know where I have to rent a car or not.
You're going to have to rent a car, man. It's Atlanta.
I hear you, man. I'm just going to the wedding. This will be vacation
hey, let me,
for
let me
people.
Take this call. I got a call coming. Let me see what it is. All right. Hello?
Yes. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah, who is this, Bianchi?
Yeah, this is Bianchi.
Yeah, man, I don't know what happened. Somebody keeps calling. This phone's starting to act up, man. I tried to blink over.
Well, let's see. 11:16 here. Time goes by fast when you're having fun.
Yeah, I like a good debate. I felt you on those statistics for the black unemployment rate.
Oh yeah, blacks.
Blacks suffer, but that's the problem though. That's the problem though. They don't even know. Like they don't take the time to educate themselves and know. They're not really sophisticated when it comes to politics. It's not. They're real simple, rudimentary when it comes to politics. And politics affects you whether you want it to or not. So people you really need to know and not just be 100% trusting of somebody. You don't see that in any circumstance except when it comes to black folks and Democrats. Nobody just trusts 100%. Look, black folks don't trust their pastor that much that they trust the Democrat Party.
Well, a lot of the things that people be saying is true about obstacles and things like that.
I agree. I just made that point. I tell people
that they need to go ahead and do what you're going to do, because the only way you're going to defeat whatever it is that you place excuses on, you got to compete against it one way or the other. And
people hate that. When you say that, they're going to come with, those black conservatives love to tell you to compete. How are you going to compete when you ain't got nothing to compete with? You know, like I heard Dr. Claude Anderson say that. You can't compete, which I disagree. Now, it's kind of a paradox in that you have a guy that's preaching black empowerment saying something is impossible to compete with. Now, true enough, I don't want to compete for a job, and I understand where you're coming from with that. But to say that you can't compete with in business, I mean, you focus on the small, low-hanging fruit in business. You don't. I'm not going to take down, Facebook. I'm not at first anyway. You don't start with Facebook. You start with, something real small first. And you start with a local college website or something, just for testing, or HBCU website. Start with that. Start small and build your network. Then you go after Facebook, when you got that. But, it's just you start small. Start with what you got. You want to go after Ford, you start small with what you have. And you may not even be able to start in the same industry because you don't have the resources to go after a particular industry. But you start, you get your capital up first.
And you control the right politics. The right politics will create government programs that gives you an advantage or put you on a more level playing field, like quote-unquote minority. Well, I'll say affirmative action, because in the earlier on, that's what affirmative action was. It was directed for blacks. But we weren't ready for it entirely. A lot of people's
I didn't know they started off. They started a black business initiative. That's what the initial name of it. Then it became minority business initiative. They changed. That's when they started adding whites in it. I didn't know that. I thought, and I found that out. History tells a lot of stuff that people have just twisted with their words. Like, for example, police is a derivative of the word policy. And that's what they are now. The Supreme Court said police don't have to protect people. They just enforce laws. So they're no longer called peacekeepers, because they were supposed to protect your property when they first came out. They were about protecting people's property and lives. Now they're not peacekeepers anymore. They're actual police. They enforce policy, which is very interesting. So that's why they look at you like they do. Like they look at you like, you're just somebody that, you're just cattle. You're not someone that they have to respect as a taxpayer.
Yeah. But though, if you get governments to enact rules and regulations, whereas they give advantages, then that's a good thing. The advantage may be to you just because you're a citizen of a municipality where work is going on. They can require that a company coming into that municipality must hire from within that municipality. And there's varied degrees of structure on which those rules can, you know, taper from. You know, like you said, when Arthur Fletcher came up with affirmative action back during the time that he came up with it, it was to benefit, you know, the slave descendants. And it initially started off very well. You know, when he was in Chicago, Richard Nixon, when he was in there trying to change the landscape of commercial construction, and white construction companies didn't want to, and unions didn't want to oblige to that, he called up Daley Sr. and said, if a hair on this black man's head is harmed, I would have the 82nd Airborne marching down Michigan Avenue come Monday morning. So it was things put in place, but like I said, we weren't aligned, whereas we could benefit from the greatest potential during those times.
Yeah. I mean, I do see opportunity. I don't really see I think Stanley said that yesterday. You got to see a land of opportunity and not a land of, you don't think in terms of scarcity, you know. And I think that dictates, I think the universe is built in such a way to when you have that mentality, it gives you what you see. Is what it gives you. If you see bountifulness and plenty, then that's what you're going to get. But if you don't see that and you see scarcity and you don't think, you know, the resources are out there for certain things, then you're going to be exactly right.
But there are black organizations out there that fund black business, the Minority Business Council at the national, and they probably have local offices in major cities like Atlanta and I know St. Louis. They guarantee a loan to a black business up to three-quarters, up to $1 million, like $750,000. They would guarantee that loan. And that's not the SBA. That was a black organization that came together during that time, and they got major corporations to come on board. If you're doing business for an Anheuser-Busch, a construction project, or for a Monsanto, then you're entitled to utilize their service. Monsanto or Anheuser-Busch or Boeing are a member of that organization, and through their dues, which ranges in the tens of thousands of dollars, their dues provide leverage in order to secure the capital in order to secure those type of loans.
Well, money is out there to be made.
So that helps a company to strive. And see, they set limits on your general revenue, whereas you can be classified to take advantage of those opportunities. You can't have a revenue of $10 million a year. Then that disqualify you from that particular opportunity. But I think $3 to $5 million a year, and you can qualify for it.
I actually know a lot of black contractors. I know one of them in particular that he's a multimillionaire, and he's just a government contractor.
I never done it. I've done one federal government job was at the Records Center here in St. Louis. I never did too much care for doing well, other than a core engineer job, which was a defense mapping.
But you do
mapping,
know that the 10 richest out of the 10 richest counties in the country, 6 of them are government employee, you know, based communities.
Mm.
Out of 10, so that's,
well, Prince George County is probably one of them.
They're
in Maryland.
That's what I'm saying. These counties are just, these people are siphoning. And what's his face? Not so blind, Mike, just a second ago, dropped the statistic about out of government spending. They say 20% of the employees make over $100,000 a year. That's a lot of people.
Well, blacks flocked to the federal government because they was treated more fairly by the federal government than they would find themselves being treated. And amongst private businesses, and I can understand that. The same thing was in the post office. Blacks flocked to the post office when it was paying $2.40 an hour. Whites didn't want the job. That's why you see so many of them employed by the post office. I was in the Internal Revenue office the other day, and I think it was lunchtime, and black women were flocking out of the place. So, and when you do find one, well,
hold
in
on
an
now,
agency
hold on,
like
80% of those workers that work for government are black women, not black men.
Yeah, these were black women.
That's interesting, ain't it?
Yeah.
I don't think that's by chance. I don't. I don't just think, okay, well, the black women just wanted it. It's brothers.
Or maybe
I
they just take. Maybe they just
like
take
that.
Up those subjects, those accounting.
No.
No. Subjects.
That's not it. That's not it. I
don't
think that's the reason.
I have never seen a black Internal Revenue agent that I can
recall.
I'm gonna
put it like this. A black person working in government is gonna be a woman most of the time. Just like when you go to court. The bailiff is going to be if it's going to be a black person, it's a black woman. It's not black men, and this is my personal opinion. I feel like the black community has been targeted by and planned. It's planning. Like, you don't just get to where we are as a people without certain dynamics being taking place. Like, for example, we're going to target black men and not get them jobs, but we'll give black women jobs. Because a woman is not as loyal to, they don't have a sense of identity or race as much as a black man does. So a black woman to get these jobs and get these education jobs primarily in school or whatever, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to think long term. They don't. They think comfort. They don't think long term a lot of times. They don't.
Well, I tell you what, when you go to one of the agencies and you get, I'd rather deal with a black woman than a white male. I've had some experiences with
black women.
Actually,
they're about the same. Actually, they're about the same.
No, they're not neither. Not, well, they may depends on who experienced them. I experienced
them.
You
know what I'm saying? Because a black woman got one of the most funkiest attitudes you ever want to see.
Well, you
got to
give them respect for what they are. But I was working with a young man. He was a stock trader, you know, who I had taught him how to do stocks. And something came up where they was getting ready to garnish his wages. Oh, I think, no, what happened, he was finding some returns, and they'd done an estimate and said he owed rather than what he really did, where in essence he lost. Well, he didn't lose, but it wasn't what they said. And he had just got this job, still got it today, and they were threatening to garnish his check. And he was in earnest trying to get the required information that they wanted, the returns, the back returns. And we went down to the office and talked to this white guy, and we showed him what we was working on, and we asked him this coming Friday and next Friday not to garnish his check. And the white guy refused to do it. So we went back that Monday and talked to a black woman, and she looked at it and she said, wait a minute. She went back to a desk, something printed out, and she came back and said, okay, we stopped the garnishment. And that's the difference that I experienced, you know, between the two.